have to come up here, or do I do it? Helen, can I do it?
Because we're the season holds.
Oh, good. I got it.
Okay, the Senate will come back into order. Reports from standing committees.
February 22, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom is referred Senate File 118, Kickstart Wyoming Economic Diversification, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 22, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 108, Economic Diversification and Development, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 22, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 100, Economic Diversification Broadband Services, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 22, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 105, Drug Donation Program Act Expansion, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 22, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 117, School Finance Amendments 3, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Messages from the House, do we have any? That's good. Yes, Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
Yes, sir, you may.
Fellow senators, I'm not sure how to say this without breaking up a little bit. I'd like to introduce you to my aide, Grace Anderson, her sister, Faith. They're Devil's Tower country, neighbors of mine, their ranch neighbors are. Their grandfather, J.W. Knuckles, who many of you know in this room, passed away at 84 yesterday. He was a statewide leader in ag. He was the only guy I ever knew that was officer, stock growers, wool growers, farm bureau. One of them guys that made things happen and moved mountains and communities. And I'd like for you to give a hand to the girls and a short prayer for J.W.
Let's bow our heads in a short prayer for J.W. He was a true Wyoming guy. Please bow your head. Stand up. Why don't we stand up, please, and bow our heads. Thank you. Go ahead, Senator Driscoll.
Basically done introducing the girls, I guess if...
Give them a hand.
But Senator Driscoll had your mic off. Go ahead. Did you have something you wish to say? Welcome to the Senate, ladies. Before you take off, and everything that Senator Driscoll said, ditto and agree. Your grandpa was a neat guy. Thank you very much for coming to the Senate. We appreciate it. Members of the Senate, do you know Senator Ellis.
Mr. President, I just wanted to add that these girls are remarkable young leaders in and of themselves. I know Senator Pappas and I had the great fortune of getting to work with them on some distance learning. They've testified before our committees, and so I think they would have done their grandpa a world of pride, or they would have made your grandpa really proud. They're really outstanding young women.
Did you agree with them?
Yes.
Yeah. Members of the Senate, we have a few more. I don't know what the numbers up there on the board. The idea is that the majority floor leader told you yesterday was to try to get through committee the whole today. That's still our intention. You know, we never in any way, shape, or form want to limit debate on committee the whole. We want to hear from everybody with everything you've got to say, but just keep that in mind, members of the Senate, as we move forward on these bills. If five senators have said the same thing, do we need five more to say the same thing? You know, just keep that in mind. No way do we want to limit debate, but let's just be as remember brevity at this point in time of our session right now. With that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I think we're ready to go back to committee of the whole.
Oh, please. Thank you. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate re-resolve itself into the committee of the whole for further consideration of bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Come on back up, Senator Hastert.
Resolve.
That's true. Good point.
Committee of the whole, come back to order as soon as I get some bills. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
May I have privilege for just a moment, please?
You may.
We're trying to manage this workload as we can. We had to get some bills back out of appropriations. You may have noticed they were off the floor, and the chairman, you were off with them doing fulfilling your duty as that. So we're trying to work these bills and get them in the right order and get them so they can come up when people are ready and people are here. So I apologize for moving this stuff around so much, but we're just trying to get this work done, and we've got to do it the way we're trying to do the best we can. So appreciate your patience and the patience of the staff who have been nimble to comply with some of the changing landscape this afternoon and today.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 108. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 108, Economic Diversification and Development, an act relating to economic diversification and development, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 9, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, and Von Flatern. Excused, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Prior to reading the bill, what's your pleasure? Senator Von Flatern. Mr. Okay. Vice President.
It's something like that. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 108. There is a standing committee amendment, and I hope I have it read in at this time, please.
Senate File 108, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 108, and I'll ask you to re-refer to Driscoll. As Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll. Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the effort of time, I'm going to do this pretty fast. There's a handout on everybody's desk. Did we move the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I'm not actually going to go off the bill. I'm going to go off this handout I gave you. This is Ag and Dow, folks. This is, you know, we talk about the economic enhancement for the state of Wyoming. Well, this enhances Wyoming's about first industry. The ag people came in here territorial days, and this is the component of it that enhances the ag industry. You know, it's our third largest, and it's the industry we got at home. It's value added. It's one that can add jobs and add dollars to the state. So what this bill actually does, it puts a couple hundred thousand dollars a year into a trade representative. And I'm sure as many of you are aware, some of us went to a foreign country a year or two ago. Neighboring state does about $350-400 million a year of trade with them, and we do about five. And we're trying to get a trade rep so Wyoming can start looking at trade overseas that's ag products. And this would also handle some other ones, but a big part of it would be ag. There's a real want for our meat products overseas. Second leg of this, there's three legs of it. The second leg of it's in-state meat processing. We only have one processor in the state of Wyoming. If you're a individual producer and you want to sell within the state, we only have one of them that allows you to USDA package cut and ship out of the state. So we really need some more of those. It is inhibiting. We have numbers of people selling literally thousands of head of beef a year. This adds huge amounts of value to our beef industry. So this is a feasibility study. Small plants are very doable. They're in that $2.5 to $4 million range. This helps them figure out how to do them and get the deal on it. Also looks at a bigger plant. The last leg of this is marketing studies, and it's to help get up some websites and do marketing for ag so that when you actually get that product out there, you can get it to a market and get it represented. Long and short, this is a $2.4 million leg of Endow, and really gives Endow a solid base. We got a number of these bills coming, and I encourage you to really look at them. This is the future of our Wyoming for our tax base. With that, I'd ask for a vote on the amendment, and then I'd stand for questions.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 108. Any discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to explain the amendment prior to voting on it. So if you go to it'll be something unusual for us. Page 1, line 9, if you go in there and you strike after appropriations, insert modifying other appropriations. If you go clear down to page 6, after accounting, insert and, delete the comma, the state. Page 6, line 15, delete entirely. Page 6, line 16, delete account, insert all sub-accounts shall be treated as separate accounts. Page 8, line 4, you delete revenues credited to and insert the legislative stabilization reserve account to, and then you have to reinstate the word TWO, to. And that's only because we took the easy route and struck all of line 7, and we needed the TWO. So it says delete revenues credited to and insert the legislative stabilization reserve account 2, which I didn't know there was account 2, but there is not. So anyway, what we've done there, and then you go page 8, lines 5 through 7, delete entirely. Page 8, line 10, after 1, or little I, insert upon the effective date of this act, and then you would insert little I, little double I. And what we've done is we've gone into the budget bill, as we all know it. We've gone to section 321 A double I to the economic diversification account created by shall be reduced by $2 million. And basically, that is the Endow account that has $19 million in it presently. And we take the $2 million right out of that. And so we're not double dipping on the $2 million that's in this bill. And then on the little double I, section 328, double I A, capital A, introductory subparagraph and subdivisions A1 and through A3 shall not be effective. Basically, we've taken those out too because they're contained within the bill. So the bill has the money in it, so we took away the $2 million that was talked about. And then the little capital uppercase A, uppercase I, uppercase double I, we struck them out because they're contained within the bill. So we went from SIPA to LSRA. We took the $2 million out there. And we also took the effective dates of, or the effective part about soliciting input from various groups to make these, make everything, the meat packing plants, do the study, everything that's contained in the bill, we took out of the budget bill. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I ask for your aye vote.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 108? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 108 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 108 passes. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 108 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 108 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 100. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 100, Economic Diversification Broadband Services, an act relating to economic diversification, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Excused, Senator Perkins. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 100, and I ask that there is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 100, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute Number 1.
I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, the substitute number one first, and ask that you vote on this at this time.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? That passes. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what we've done is moved the amendment that created the substitute bill, and to explain the substitute bill, I ask that you call on Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, we've got Senate File 100. Senate File 100 is one of the legs of the Endow program. This is one of the recommendations that came back from the Endow Executive Council. If you've read that, you'll know where this is headed. What this is, one of the primary stools that we have is Wyoming has a growing, and it's an emerging, and it's young, and it's in infancy, but it is a growing and turning to a vibrant technology services sector. And this is part and parcel of doing that. It also turns out that this is also one of the main concerns of the ag community. As they went to their meetings, one of their big issues is having enough broadband services in remote areas of the state so that they can do their business as well. You know, it's an interesting thing, Mr. Chairman, when you sit there around and or you visit with an ag man and you see him on his cell phone, and with one thumb he's talking to you, and with the other thumb, with one thumb on his cell phone, he's trading futures prices on the commodity markets that have to do with his business. And so, well, just because we wear cowboy hats and boots doesn't mean that we don't need internet and high-tech services. So what we're trying to do is to assist with this, and what this is about is providing opportunities for local entities, what we call eligible entities, to provide broadband services in rural areas where they're either unserved or underserved. That's the purpose. You go to, we probably start on page 3. If you look, these are the qualified entities that can apply for grants under this program to achieve this. One is a governmental entity, which is either a city, town, or joint powers board, or a tribal government, either the Northern Arapaho or Eastern Shoshone Tribes of the Wind River Indian Reservation. And then we also provide in subsection D on the bottom of page 3 that they can, and this is the preferred, one of the preferred methods is a public-private partnership, that they can invite business entities to participate in the project for the purpose of funding under this article. And so what we're trying to do is that's our hope, and that's the hope out of this is that we'll mostly be public-private partnerships. But in those instances where it's just not feasible for industry to be involved with that and to do that, to provide counties and these joint powers boards and towns the ability to get that last mile of broadband in for their folks. If you go to page 4, there's the application process. You find there some of the basic requirements that are in the application and about how they do that. One of the things they have to do is if they have a participating entity, they have to show, if you're an eligible governmental entity who's applying for a grant under this, you have to show that you've contacted providers who have experience and who provide broadband services. You have to show that you've contacted them and they've had an opportunity to bid and be involved in the process before you can be approved on the grant on your own. You'll find, if you turn to page 5, talking about some of the some restrictions on public-private partnerships so that trying to keep the playing field relatively equal so that industry can play. Is we've got four restrictions on there, some sideboards that entities can't do. They can't require an open access network so that other service providers and other people can come on. That would open that up. That was a crime to them. It's one that we need to look at very carefully. But also rates, terms, and conditions that differ from those the provider offers in services in other areas. One of the conditions of this is that we not have rate regulation. We'd avoid the involvement of additional or further rate regulation. And also time constraints to build which are not technologically feasible. You go then to the bottom of page 5 over to the top of over to page 6. You'll see the information has to be provided in the application. Go over to pages 7. We talk about, and one of the things we're talking about, if I remember right, and I did have to leave committee during part of this, but we're trying to find some minimum standards, which was generally really not all that great, all that fast, but a 25 up and 3 down, if I remember the remotes right, the projections right. We've got the ability that they go through there. We have the ability, a challenge process on pages 8 and 9, that if a qualified entity, which is a governmental entity, applies and they haven't included or haven't followed the process in permitting industry an opportunity to participate, there's a challenge process so that industry can stop that and slow it down so that the industry is not excluded. We go over here on funding determinations. If you go to page 9, page 11, we have the ability, evaluating the applications. We give some direction to the council who will be looking at these things to making a determination about who gets the highest priority. And so we're looking at these criteria. The criteria you find at 11 on over to page 12. So they include they offer newer, substantially upgraded broadband services to important community institutions and businesses. They serve economically distressed areas of the state, as measured by indices of unemployment, poverty, or population loss that are significantly greater than the statewide average. Trying to find things that include a component of to actively promote the adoption of newly available broadband services in the community, provide evidence of strong support in the project from citizens, community, business, and institutions in the community, and provide access to broadband service to a greater number of unserved households and businesses. And you just can continue down and read what those are. If you go on limitations, you'll see that the limitations on the grant applications are that nobody's able to ask for more than 50% of the cost of a project. So the grant, a grant that's offered out of this program will never be more than 50% of the project, and at least 10% of the project cost has to be matched by the local government entity or the governmental entity submitting the application. And then there's some stuff about different things, the way they can match and what they can use for their match. They can use certain grant funds, whether they're the federal mineral royalty grant funds from SLIB or otherwise. And but we are requiring that they use some of their own money to do that. It's one of the ways that they show support and that they're committed to the project. You go back on pages 14 and 15, provide application, evaluation. There's an evaluation report that comes out. And there's some to provide following the adoption of a state enhancement plan. The council will come back and publish on its website and provide the Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Interim Committee list of all applications for funding under the article made during the previous year. And for each application, we'll list the items that you've got listed there on Romanet 1, Romanet 2, and Romanet 3. We go back there, we're talking about minimum broadband speeds on page 15 and 16 and what we're trying to achieve. And there you see the 25 megabytes per second upload and 3 down. I don't know quite why we call that high-speed broadband, but apparently it's better than a lot of places have in the state right now. And for projects, if you notice, they're also on lines 4 through 8 on page 16 for projects primarily serving business entities. The minimum speed adopted by the council shall be 1 gigabyte per second download and 100 megabytes per second upload, trying to make sure that if we're going to do this for economic development that we have the speeds that are necessary for business. Then you have the Advisory Council, the Broadband Coordinator, who, if I remember right, is located in the Wyoming, as a one member of the Wyoming Business Council. The staff is designated as that coordinator and works there. We've got some application there. We want to make this available to all entities, including the nations. You see on page 17, the Advisory Council. These are all duties for the Advisory Council. You also see we want to develop an inventory and map of current broadband availability so everybody will know where those holes are and where it needs to happen. Work on coordination and work with ETS and other people to make sure that this works. So ultimately, you see where we're going with this. If you go, we've got our the Office of the Chief Information Officer is engaged to help carry this out. You see where our definitions are on page 20. Confirming or conforming amendments for other statutes we find moving forward. And then section 3, you see on page 22, you see the creation of a further sub-account is created within the economic diversification account. You see a separate account, a sub-account is created for the broadband development. And then you see the appropriations in section 3 on page 23. It's a $350,000 to the Wyoming Business Council for purposes to carry out their jobs that they've been assigned under this, and $10 million in the broadband development sub-account. That's the bill, and would stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Senate File 100? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I understand this bill covers broadband, and that's all very, very useful. Mr. Chairman, in part of my district, part of the problem is plain old telephone service. Landlines are deteriorating. Cell phones are iffy or absent in part of the area. Does this do anything for that problem?
Further discussion, Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just a few questions. First, the appropriation. It comes from funds attributable to earnings from fiscal year 2019, which is money we don't have. And I think we had discussion the other day about not spending money we don't have. So I'd like to know if there's plans to maybe swap that out for actual funding. I hesitate to be the spoiler because broadband's very popular. I'm in favor of broadband, but I want to make sure that I'm understanding what I'm voting on. The second part of it is this. The CapEx on building a broadband is a considerable consideration, but you got to be able to fund it and operate it once it's up and running. So you got to have a customer base. And we're a small state spread out, and it's a real problem to find a customer base. So what was the name of the program that wired all the schools? When you know, we built a pipe this big and gave industry money to build a pipe this big, we only needed this much. They got all this excess capacity. I don't know that they've even sold that capacity yet. Are there places that aren't connected? Yeah, I could name a few. I don't know if wireless is I think a wireless, like a 5G situation, might be more than putting cable in the ground. I don't know what the answer is. But my exposure to it, we had a consortium of local governments that looked at solving some of our issues with connectivity through Camel Country. And my territory and some of the really underserved areas on the eastern side, there's not enough customer base to pay for it, not operate it. Even if they give it to you free and built it, you couldn't operate it. So the consultant that the state of Wyoming hired, bright guy, was accountable for getting a lot of data centers into this state. So he introduced us to this whole idea that there's internet brokers. Isn't it amazing, a capitalist society, the ingenuity? There's brokers. So you contact brokers and companies contact the brokers. So there were big companies looking to get to Seattle instead of going through a neighbor to the west. They were looking for a shorter route. There were companies looking to go this way, that way. They knew what they needed, and they were buying and selling this capacity. And it was still really tough to put something together that could support a broadband connection, even if the state paid for it. So I guess I just I'd like to believe that there's somebody out there that's got a master plan as to how this is all going to work before we start asking people for grants and handing them out. Is there a broader vision as to how, forget about the CapEx, how are we going to fund the thing, how are we going to pay for the thing once it's up and running? And I just don't want to embarrass myself by rushing in to put this all together and then find out we don't have any takers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, there is another committee of the whole amendment, and if it's proper at this time, I'd like it read in.
Senate File 100, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 22, line 13.
So I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, and you'll have to take my word on this, but it's just like the last bill. We don't use SIPA. So that answers, I think, a question that came up earlier. We go to the LSRA, and we address that by spending the money we do have instead of the money we're hoping to have. So if you go to page 22, line 13, after to the account, you insert or appropriate sub-account on page 22, line 15. You delete account, inserting accounts. Page 23, lines 9 through 12, you delete entirely and insert. There is appropriated from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, LSRA. And then page 23, line 16, after 9, 12, 59, 1509, delete the balanced line and insert, semicolon. Page 23, line 17 through 19, delete entirely. Page 24, after line 8, insert. Lowercase b, upon the effective date of this section, colon, the appropriation contained in the House bill, section blah, 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 to the economic diversification account created by shall be reduced $2 million. So basically we go in there where they've set aside $19 million or so. We take out what is in this bill, which is the $2 million. And then you go lowercase double I, 2018 House Bill 00001, Section 321A2B shall not be effective. That is where they designated $2 million to go for rural broadband. We're taking that out of there. We're assuming that they will come to this and use this as their... So we're not telling them they got to use $2 million of this $10 million appropriation for rural. We're just saying... Here's the $10 million. And then on you put in lowercase triple I, the appropriation contained in 2018 House Bill 0001, Section 320A, and there's a typo there. It should say double I. It shouldn't say triple I because there is no triple I. It should say double I, which is the same thing that's in the little I above on your amendment sheet, on line 23 on your amendment sheet. To the economic diversification account created by blah, 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 shall be reduced $8,350,000. So basically, we're not double dipping. We're taking the money out of what the budget bill because it's appropriated as $19 million as a lump sum in the economic diversification account. So we're taking it out. We're spending it from LSRA. We're not spending it from SIPA. We have the money at the moment in savings. And that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
We're on Standing Committee, or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 of Senate File 100. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Slatern's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100 has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Von Slatern.
If it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to read in Committee of the Whole Number 2.
Senate File 100, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 2, line 5.
And I move Committee of the Whole Number 2 to Senate File 100, and I ask you to call on the senator from the Ivory Towers to explain.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, one of the things we discussed in committee but didn't have the time to work into a standing committee amendment was what we would be assuming or what would be dictating as an unserved community, which is the eligibility requirement for applying for this grant. So we worked up some initial language related to that, which we see in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. You can insert this amendment on page 2, line 5, where we indicate that for purposes of this article, unserved means broadband service at or below 10 megabits per second download and 1 megabit per second upload speed. That sets the floor where if you are below that for those entities involved, that you would be qualifying as an unserved for the purposes of this act. Mr. Chairman, we will have a later amendment which goes in and provides further revision, but this is a necessary part of the legislation. Without any, if there isn't any comment, I'd urge the body to pass this. Either way, I'd be happy to answer questions. I urge the body to support Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100. Is there any further discussion? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of questions. I was working off the previous bill, but I think that I don't see that this section's been changed any. So on the substitute bill, I think would track in. I want to go to 9, 12, 15.
Senator Hicks, are you on the amendment?
That is the amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100.
This is the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100 has passed. Now we're back on the bill. Senator Hicks?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a little clarification. So when I go into the ranking criteria under this that talks about programs, And I need a little edification here because I thought the whole Endel program was about diversification of our economy, and that's what we were trying to accomplish with this. But when I look at the evaluation process on how we rank applicants for this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this looks like it's starting down to the Great Society program to rural broadband the country. And so if we go to that, and you go under the application process, and you go down to B, subsection B, and it says priority to applicants that meet one or more of the following criteria. And then it goes into talking about community institutions under subsection 1, community institutions including libraries, education institutions, public safety facilities. I'm assuming that's going to be like your police departments and health care, your hospitals or rural health care districts. And we go into subsection 2 to serve economically distressed areas of the state based on unemployment, poverty. Go to the next criteria, says include a component to actively promote the adoption of newly available broadband services in the community. Let me flip one over here that caught my eye under subsection 3. Here's one that I have a lot of curiosity. It says, include a component to actively promote the adoption of the newly available broadband. We're on page 12, line 1, Romanet 3, going through the priorities as how these applications would be funded. So the priority number one is to fund existing infrastructure in rural communities. That's going to be your libraries, your hospitals, your police departments. So if we go back to page 11, subsection B, it says, in evaluating applications and entering into agreements to provide funding, the council shall give priority to applicants that meet one or more of the following criteria. Those criteria are outlined in Romanet little I, all the way through Romanet 8. But you go into and they are prioritized based in that category. So when I look at the priority schedule, I'm trying to find the business component that we're pulling into this, and I'm not finding it. Our priorities, it really looks to me like it's a rural electrification, except for this is a broadbandification program. So I'm still trying to understand. If the intent of this is to attract businesses into a community, why that is not the number one ranking to bring in? Instead of why are we have to have an impoverished community as number two, first priority is if you're going to run this to existing infrastructure in the community. And three, still probably when we go to that, that's the one I think is most problematic. So the third priority is including a component in your application that actually promotes the adoption of the newly available broadband service. So are we going to pull broadband into an area, and then we have to go out and market to try to get people to buy it? And that's the way I read that provision. Are we really going to give grants without a significant component of a business that has to be a partner in this to do this? This looks like a subsidy program to me. And that's fine if that's what we want to do for economic development. But I'm trying to find the economic development component in the business and the application process. You got to go way down the priority list. What businesses? What type of businesses? What business partner has to be involved? So I could come in and put a business in a community, and the way the criteria, I could sign up and say, I support broadband, but I don't even need it for my business. It's a welding shop. Just because we're a business, I want to know if we're going to do economically diversification, and we're going to put these grants out there, what businesses are we going to attract? And why is that not the priority of the program? I'm trying to understand this. If somebody can explain me why that criteria is the way it is, instead of saying, look, you have to have a business partner involved before the state's going to grant this, and they're going to have, just like we do with a large project budget. When we do these large projects, you have to be able to demonstrate that you're bringing so many jobs into the community, that you've expanded the tax base of the community. That's what I thought economic diversification was. I'm not seeing it here, so if somebody can please explain that to me, it would be very helpful.
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Sure, thank you. Well, I think there's two components that you have to look at as you look at economic diversification. Economic diversification isn't just bringing in new businesses. Economic diversification is also giving individuals who are already here the opportunity and tools to expand. And so as you look at it, the executive council, as they looked at this, they found that they looked at, and if you go back and if you'll pull out your Endow reports and look at it, and the report that came back from the Endow council, they talk about the limitations and the hurdles that you've got to economic development. One of those is the lack of high-speed broadband in the state of Wyoming. So I think you come at it a couple of ways. First, just going back to the document itself, if you look at page 11, and evaluating B, there is nothing in there that indicates which of those have priority over the others. And in fact, the council that will be analyzing these things has a right to promote their own rules with respect to that. These are the guidelines. But the very first one is, first of all, there's no saying that this is a priority. It just says meets one or more of the following criteria with additional priority given for meeting multiple. So if you meet one, you potentially qualify. The more you meet, then the better your chances are. The very first one in lines 12 through 14 is offer new or substantially upgraded broadband service to community institutions and businesses. So right there in the number one is to provide additional or better broadband, more bandwidth to businesses, not just the local institutions, which my good friend is exactly right. It's the hospitals, it's law enforcement, it's libraries. It's those types of things, the important community institutions, but also right there is businesses. If you also go back to the bottom of page 12, lines 16 through 19, you're talking about providing access to very high-speed broadband service to business districts or other business areas and are likely to secure economic benefits for the surrounding locality. So, again, we're talking about businesses there. I'd also point out that one of the things that happens in this also goes back to my good friend, the former mayor of Sheridan. If you go back into about whether or not, and no one wants to go off half-cocked on broadband services. So, if you go back and look, what you have under pages, beginning on page 16, is the, you look, the Business Council, it was in the middle of the, on line 12, the Business Council shall, in consultation with the economic needed diversity options for Wyoming Executive Council, establish a broadband advisory council of 11 members. And so we have the chief information officer as a designee. Remaining members of the council shall be appointed from, by the public at large with geographic diversity to include diverse interests, including backgrounds in economic development, state or local government entities, broadband providers, technology-related businesses, healthcare, education, library services, and public safety. Also one member from the Northern Arapaho Tribe or Eastern Shoshone Tribe. So we're including them in, shall be appointed to the advisory council. Then you have some other members. What the advisory council then provides advice and makes recommendations to the council on the following subjects. This is in the middle of page 17. One is they develop an at the bottom of page 17, they develop an inventory and map of current broadband availability. So we don't want to put broadband where we already have it. As provided by voluntary submission from broadband providers, some of that is proprietary, so you don't necessarily have right to all of it, or derived from other resources, including the Federal Communications Commission. And if you go back over and skip down, there's some more stuff there. If you look at the top, you've got Romanet 2 and Romanet 3. If you go down to 16, you see Romanet 5 proposed to the council a state broadband enhancement plan for adoption by the council not later than September the 1st of 2018. So by September of this year, they're to come back with a plan about how do we do this, where do we do this, and what do we do, so that we've got, we're not just aiming and throwing, sprinkling money across the state of Wyoming to whoever applies, but we've actually, it's going to be in conformity with a plan that's been submitted and gone through some vetting process, both by the advisory council and then to the endowed council. And so you look on, if you go down, and then by later on, they propose recommending change to the definition of unserved areas, including unserved residential and business corridors. The business council shall, in consultation with the endowed executive council and the governor's office, talks about and designate an employee of coordinator of broadband services. So we've got a point. We're trying to provide both a single point of entry, trying to provide lots of expertise outside state government, from the private and public sectors, to come in and advise the council about how we do this, how they set up and administer this program. And so from that, there'll be the rules that develop that further enhance this. And so what we're laying here is simply the broad-based framework of how we're going to pursue this. And I think the anticipation is that there will be no grants offered until the plan's in and they've promulgated the rules and they know what direction they're headed. I think the other question that was out, I think we answered the question about SIPA as far as broadband and telecom. I'm not sure of that question. I would assume, and somebody else who knows a lot more about this can probably stand up and correct me, but I believe that with voice over internet protocols that there would be enhanced opportunity if the broadband is high enough that we can switch over and that you can actually have telephone service through the voice internet protocols.
Further discussion?
Question.
Seeing none. Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Von Fladen's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 100. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 100 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 118. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 118, Kickstart Wyoming Economic Diversification, an act relating to economic development and diversification, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12 to return to committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Fladen, Senator Bebout, Chair, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned to committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 118 and yield to my good colleague from over the top in the white ivory tower to explain the bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Governor President. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 118, Kickstart Wyoming Economic Diversification, is another one of the Endow Initiative bills that focuses on early stage entrepreneurial activities in the state of Wyoming, trying to provide seed funds and initial capital investments. It focuses on trying to provide research and development funds for small businesses, and it tries to find ways to facilitate economic development in these small, innovative research and development businesses by identifying potential barriers that we put into place through rules, regulations, state law, and potentially federal laws and regulations. Going through the legislation, Mr. Chairman, I'll start with the legislation. We'll get back to the amendment in a moment. We see on page 2 that we are creating new statute that creates the Wyoming Research and Innovation Program Fund and then provide some details about that, that the council shall administer a Wyoming Research and Innovation Program under which matching funds necessary to access federal research and development grant funds or other non-state funds may be provided as specified in this section. Those funds would be available depending on whether or not the application or applicant is consistent with an externally funded grant specific to priority economic sectors, which would be identified in the approved 20-year comprehensive economic diversification strategy. That strategy is still under development, so this assumes that we have that strategy in place, those priority sectors are identified. That's something the Endow Council will be working on, and the research in question would have to be consistent with that. On to page 3, the Business Council will promulgate rules and regulations with the Endow Executive Council, University, and others to carry out the provisions of this section and to focus on that exchange for funding in the projects throughout the state and other institutions, political subdivisions of the state. On to page 3, at the bottom, we create the Startup Wyoming Investments Fund, which is a little bit different, Mr. Chairman. And going on to page 4, we see that, once again, the Wyoming Business Council is the agent of action on this, coordinating with Endow and the university, will invest in high-growth startup business entities, which provide opportunity to advance the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Wyoming in priority economic sectors as divided by that Endow report, which we'll look at later. And the proposal is directed specifically at seed stage development or growth stage funding opportunities for businesses. The council shall include in the proposal, so the concept here, incidentally, is that this Endow Council is going to put together a proposal for how they would facilitate this seed and growth stage investment. We don't have the details of that yet. They are required to report back, as we can see on page 5, no later than July 1st, 2018, so that we can consider that as a possible way to move forward and extend these funds or some portion of these funds towards these early stage businesses in their research and development for innovative sectors of research. Bottom of page 5, we start amending some statute where we're looking originally at economic development statutes in 912-105, and we extend by adding the Kickstart Wyoming Grants Program and the Small Business Innovative Research Matching Program. On to page 6, we have conforming language where we add to the council's objective not just economic development, but economic development and diversification. We add that in a few places to make it clear that that's the objective of the new programs that are working under the Endow Initiative. On to page 7. This new B paragraph is where we're working on creating Startup Wyoming. So the council, in consultation with the coordinator of economic diversification, will implement this Startup Wyoming program, again consistent with this comprehensive plan in the economic diversification sectors, where the program shall, first of all, foster connectivity between entrepreneurs, basically trying to facilitate communication between the startup and innovative sectors of our state. On to page 8, provide those entrepreneurs with all the tools that they need to get their businesses rolling. Romanet 3, in conjunction with the university and basically the rest of the organizations in the state, develop incubators, accelerators, co-working spaces, and other places to foster entrepreneurialism in the state of Wyoming. Bottom of page 8, the new paragraph C, is that the council shall administer this Kickstart Wyoming program to provide funding to early-stage ventures of Wyoming-based entrepreneurs. And you can see the amounts for this program at the bottom on lines 19 through 22, that the funding for these seed grant opportunities shall be in amounts ranging from $5,000 to $50,000 and provided under the following conditions. I'll stop before we go on to the conditions to say that the variation between $5,000 and $50,000 needs to have a difference in what the state's expectation back is to maintain constitutionality of this legislation. So while a $5,000 seed grant might not contain an awful lot of strings, the $50,000 grant that's going out to the startup is going to require more consideration back to the state. As we look at that consideration onto page 9, we see first and foremost, those individuals that are applying for the grants have to reside in Wyoming, be headquartered in Wyoming, and organized under Wyoming's laws. Under subparagraph A, they also have to maintain that meaningful nexus, as we use in other language and statute, to the state of Wyoming. In B, provide a service or concept that has an economic return and the possibility for jobs and expanded tax base and diversification of the economy. In C, agree to provide a report back to the state about their progress. On to page 10. In D, this is a new paragraph about the council administering a small business innovative research matching program in accordance with this section. Small business innovative research is a federal program that many of the agencies and departments at the federal level utilize to do their commercializable research and development. So they put out calls for proposals for research grants to small business around the country, National Institutes of Health, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, NASA, all of our research-related entities have SBIR programs, and the way it works is typically there's a phase one. That phase one is up to $100,000. There's a phase two, which can actually get up to $1 million. And what we're doing through this program is providing some matching funds available to those SBIR R&D companies to augment what they can bring in terms of their research and development. We currently already have what we call a phase zero program in the state of Wyoming that's been successful. It's administered through the University of Wyoming, funded through the Wyoming Business Council, and it provides a $5,000 initial grant to facilitate that early seed stage research for the SBIR companies so that they can get some preliminary research and results done that can then feed into the phase one application for the $100,000. What this program does then, as we can see in the D paragraph, is set up this matching fund where, as you can see in Romanet 1 on page 10, that the eligibility requirements are similar to previously, where you have to be headquartered and have a meaningful nexus in the state of Wyoming for at least 3 years. On to page 11, you have to be receiving the federal funds through the SBIR Research and Small Business Technology Transfer Programs. These are competitive grants. It's difficult to get these grants, so that's an excellent vetting process. If the federal agency that put out the call for proposals is comfortable with it, then we know that there's some research that's behind it and that there's a propensity for commercialization and development. On to page 11, we're on page 11, paragraph D. We have to have this be a marketable asset with where there's a possibility for diversification of the economy, agree to a report. On to page 12. There are some ties here where if the entity commercializes, and we have a definition of that a little bit later, which basically means they have to make three times the value of the grant. That's what we're calling the threshold for commercialization. But if they commercialize, they have to report for 3 years the number of jobs created, salary range, taxable assets, and potential revenues from it. On to page 13. We have the matching grant values. The phase one is up to 100% of the $100,000. Phase two is up to 100% of $250,000. So in that instance, it's not the full range of the potential phase two award. On Romanet 3, the funds are made available as soon as practicable. The concept there is for the phase two grant. Sometimes there's a delay. So if you're awarded a phase two grant, this would provide some bridge funding to allow the continuation of that research and development. Romanet 4 is an important provision where an entity has to repay all of the matching funds with 4% interest if they commercialize the service and onto page 14, fail to maintain that nexus within the state of Wyoming for 3 years after commercialization. So we're making sure that we've got some clawback feature if we don't actually have that business maintain that meaningful nexus for the next 3 years. 14 on to 15, adopt rules and regulations for eligibility requirements and other provisions. On to page 15, providing some reporting requirements with conditions and terms of those reports. On to page 16. Bottom of page 16, coordination of business permits. This just says that the council is going to look into ways to help out and facilitate any difficulties or identify difficulties that these small businesses may have with regard to specific federal, state, and local regulations which unduly impede or delay permitting and licensing within the state. Page 17 creates the economic diversification account, or it created it, and we are amending it to include, you can see at the bottom or in the middle of page 18, the creation of some subaccounts, where one of those subaccounts is the Wyoming Research and Innovation subaccount. Another subaccount created is the Startup Wyoming subaccount. On to page 19, section 3 is where we have the appropriations. There's a $5 million appropriation to the Startup Wyoming subaccount. There's a $6 million appropriation to the Wyoming Research and Innovation subaccount, which feed the programs that we discussed, and the rest of the bill is the efficacy of it. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the legislation at this point in time. I'd ask that, if it hasn't been read in, that the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 be read in.
Senate File 118, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 14.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118 and ask the body for favorable consideration. This amendment does a couple of things, Senate. The first two are trying to strengthen the provisions for the consideration the state gets back. There was some concern as we were addressing this legislation that under circumstances where sufficient funds were provided, the state might want to seek additional consideration. So we see the addition on lines 21 through 28 of language in establishing provisions for adequate consideration to the state. The council may include, but is not limited to, requiring a recipient to seek additional non-state investment funding. And the same type of provision is put on then for the other program, lines 31 through 37. Provisions to ensure adequate consideration for the amount of the funding provided. The council may include, but is not limited to, assessment of those items specified in the previous section, specifying the allowable use of funds, requiring a recipient to seek additional non-out-of-state funds and investments. So those are the two provisions where we strengthened the consideration clauses. And then moving on to page 2, we delete and reinsert, upon the effective date of this act, of the appropriation contained in 2018 House Bill 1, Section 321 to the Economic Diversification Account created shall be reduced dollar for dollar by the appropriation. So this is just taking into consideration any redundancy, or not the redundancy, but the other provision that's in the state budget so that this appropriation is not dual listed with one of the appropriations in the budget. With that, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, I would call for the question.
On Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Raffis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 18, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Senate File, or Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118 is passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding Senate File 118, Kickstart Wyoming Economic Diversification.
Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, technical question with regard to the constitutionality here. We're talking about grants, et cetera. Normally, Section 16, Article 16, Section 6 forbids them. There's a special process in 1612, properly known as Amendment 4, that requires two-thirds vote. Is that what these come under, and will this require a two-thirds vote in third reading?
Further discussion? Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a question, and there's several references to this. So if you go into page 2 and you start with line 17, said funded grants specific to priority economic sectors identified and approved in the 20-year comprehensive economic diversification strategy. So the real crux to what I want a little discussion on is the 20-year economic diversification strategy under WS 912-1402. And we also bring that language in again, and we keep referencing that. You're going to see it as you flip over a couple of pages. It's referenced throughout the document. And I'm looking for that document. So what I'm looking is for the comprehensive plan that it states would be done. And the only thing, and if there's one out there, and I haven't seen it, I'd just like a copy of it. But the only thing I've seen is the Endow preliminary findings and recommendations. Is there a comprehensive plan available that hasn't been distributed? Because the only thing I've got is Endow's preliminary findings and recommendations, and yet that section that I stated talks it has to have. Let me go back to the exact citation on that. Under 9.12.14.02a, little Romanette 4, it says we will have a comprehensive plan. Does Endow have a comprehensive plan?
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer my colleague from Rollins in Carbon County's question, you know, we talked about this last time about what we do with Endow, and I think we need to go back to the premise of what we're trying to accomplish here and what we're looking at doing for the state of Wyoming. And clearly, we've been a state of boom and bust cycles. You know, and we've had this. You could pick up a newspaper in 1933. You could say mineral revenues are down, rigs aren't drilling, education costs are up, what do we do? And it goes on and on and on. And fortunately, in the past, minerals have bailed us out. And in my opinion, members of the Senate, that's not going to happen this time because a lot of other influences are affecting the minerals industry. We all understand what's happened to coal. You know, we are up to 440 million tons a year. We understand what the administration, previous administration, and some of the policies have done to coal and being able to produce our coal. The latest numbers I see are 240 million tons of coal. Might be a reasonable number we could expect down the road. We have oil and gas. We have competition from the shale plays, and it's huge. Just south of us in the DJ Basin in Colorado, where they have, I think their taxes on oil and gas is like 5%. Ours is 13%. They have fee surface. They have fee minerals. They have these huge prolific wells that come in, and we're struggling. So minerals will not come back, in my opinion, and bail us out like they have in the past. So what do we do for Wyoming? What do we do about the future? You have to have a long-term plan. And I remember when my colleagues from Campbell County, from Lander, from Sheridan County, we were all in the House dealing with this, and there were many senators here, a colleague from Park County, Natrona County. We dealt with this in the late 90s. Same deal. What do we do about diversification? We had tax reform 2000. We had all these different things we talked about. At the end of the day, before we could implement or get anything done, minerals came back. So what we have in front of you, what we passed last time, is a 20-year comprehensive plan, because it's more than the sitting governor or the new governor or new members of the legislature. You have to have continuity. That's what we're trying to accomplish. If you look at that plan, there's triggers throughout the plan that talk about specific things that need to happen by certain dates. And this plan is not driven by government or bureaucracy. It's driven by young entrepreneurs, middle-aged, older entrepreneurs, all the people in Wyoming that understand our state that make it work. They've been working diligently, and I can give you these reports. I can show you what they've done. Another trigger occurs in August of next year where they specifically get into which businesses we think we can recruit and grow. And they've come with these are preliminary recommendations, but it's to this point, and these are ideas. And you look at most of these, they really are set up so we continue to monitor and move in that direction. But if we do nothing now, we've really missed an opportunity. It's called business. And in my opinion, if you're a businessman, and one of the toughest decisions I had to make in business in Wyoming was when times were the toughest and revenues and the traditional ways for my business were not there, I had to try to diversify, and I had to try to make steps and do things that were tough. But in order to stay in business, I had to do it, and I did it, and I survived. That's what we're trying to do here. You can argue about when the dates or reports are coming and all that, but bottom line, it has to be a commitment by this legislature, by the executive branch, to move forward for the next, and it's a 20-year cycle. And if you need to get some more of those reports, I'll be glad to provide them to you. We've worked really hard to try to come up with these different plans that we think moves our state in the right direction. Now, if there's particular things we need to move and make them a little bit better, we're open for that. We've got to start and continue the process.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Hicks.
And just for my second time. Nobody here denies the need that we need to diversify economy, but times are tough. And my concern is that it's a limited resource, financing, and I'm just concerned to make sure that we target the best return on our dollar. It's not to say that there's anything wrong with the process. I just want to make sure that as we go through here, that we're strategic, we go through and check all the boxes to make sure that this is the best expenditures for our dollar. So, you know, great, we're moving this forward. I'm all for that. I just think periodically we always need to look back and say, is there an opportunity that we may have missed along the road? I guess what I don't want to do, Mr. Chairman, is just run too fast towards something without being just a little bit more methodical given the nature of where our financial situation's at.
Senator Hicks, I appreciate you wanting to limit yourself to discussion, but we're in committee of the whole. Senator Peabody.
Mr. Chairman, that was the first thing I was going to say, that you don't have to limit yourself twice on this one. No, I think that's exactly what I want to hear from all members of the Senate, and that's why we're here, and I welcome that input. None of us have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I do know that we need to work together, and certainly if there's more things we can do now that make it more strategic, more positive, funds are limited. We got to be so careful with our dollars. We know that. We have to make some tough decisions on priorities. To me, a priority is this, and this is one of the highest priorities, I think, for our state, because it's not just about this budget session. It's about the future of Wyoming, and we need to step up. But how we do it, you know, we're looking for input.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, beginning of this debate, I asked a question about the constitutionality. Mr. Chairman, I've not received a convincing answer on that subject. Mr. Chairman, I renew my plea. Why isn't this one that requires a two-thirds vote? Because it has to be under the Amendment 4 process. Absent a convincing answer to that, Mr. Chairman, I'm a firm no on the bill.
Further debate, Senator Rathbus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, regarding the good question about how these funds are working. These are not the Article 4 funds. These are public purpose investment funds, which means that the state has to have appropriate due consideration back. And we can provide additional information. I can actually get a memo distributed to the body that addresses that specifically for this legislation, and we'll make sure that everybody has that available. That's the first point. The second point I'd like to make is with regard to some of the discussion. One of the things we heard from the folks on the Endow Committee and from the business community was that the efforts we take for diversification have to be at the speed of business, not at the speed of either bureaucracy or government. And that's one of the difficult things for us to do, and that's really what this legislation is focused on, is trying to find a path forward where we can identify the highest potential returns on investment, try to engage in what the market is doing and facilitate that with public-private partnerships instead of trying to steer everything ourselves and make the decisions. And this is a very thoughtful piece of legislation. I hope the body will support it because it does just that. It recognizes that there's already good entrepreneurial development in the state that, like what other states have engaged in, Wyoming needs to engage in some stimulation, development, and cooperation where we encourage and foster the development of that entrepreneurial spirit instead of standing in its way. Mr. Chairman, I hope the body will support this legislation, move it forward. There's great opportunity for the future here.
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just to be specific, it went through it very quickly in the explanation of the bill, but these are classed as public purpose investments, and going forward, we're trying to be very careful to ensure that they don't fall in the realm of donations, which would be in violation of our Constitution. And so what you find, and this went through is really quick in the bill process, but the Kickstart Wyoming program, you start in on on page 8, middle of the page, shall administer the program to provide funding, and then you start to see these requirements, and what is it that the state of Wyoming receives in return in consideration for these grants. And so For example, there in Cap A on page 9, you have committed to maintaining a meaningful nexus to the state of Wyoming, including after commercialization of a particular product, concept or design, any other marketable asset developed with the assistance of the fund. So you've got to stay in Wyoming. That you propose a service product or concept which provides an economic return to the state of Wyoming through the creation of jobs, expanded tax base, and diversification of the economy. Agree to provide a report to the council on the progress of the commercialized services, and so forth. As you go through and read those, and then continue on through pages 10 and through pages 11. And so the instruction and the advice from LSO was to be very careful with how we did these things to avoid that very concern that my tall fellow senator from Natrona County was about, that these are not, they don't fall into the realm of donations, but they're provided a meaningful return or a meaningful consideration back to the state of Wyoming. I believe also in here that there was a change to provide that if they left the state after they get these, that we have the ability to recoup the grants as well. So that's just referring back to the bill to try and answer that question.
Question.
Further discussion. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 118, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate File 118 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 119. The reading clerk will read the bill. Senator Rothman.
Senate File 119, Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Program, an act relating to economic development and diversification, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Bebout, Chairman, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon, excused Senator Hastert, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move and the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 119 do pass. I will yield to my colleague from Sweetwater County to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, in the long list of endows, and we bring Senate File 119, Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Program. Mr. Chairman, workforce is Wyoming's single greatest inhibitor and opportunity for growth and stability. Addressing workforce training is critical to all economic diversification efforts. It is estimated by 2025, 60% of America's workforce will need education beyond high school, like an industry or workforce certificate, a degree, or some other high-quality credential. Wyoming's rate of higher education attainment is around 45.8%, which is equal to the national rate. Our governor has established an aggressive higher education attainment rate of 67% by 2025, and Colorado and Utah have established goals of 66%. To build a sustainable, diversified, value-added economy, workers will need to develop skills to support Wyoming's existing, new, and emerging sectors, while some may need to return to school to upgrade their skills. Access to effective workforce training programs will be an integral part of Wyoming's toolbox for to better position Wyoming when an existing or new employer needs trained or talented employees. So, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of the reasons for the bill. And under the bill, Senate File 119, on page 1, we have Wyoming Statute 922609, the Wyoming Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Partnership Act, provides incentive to business to locate and expand in Wyoming through state-sponsored workforce training in priority economic sectors as identified in Wyoming's 20-year economic diversification strategy. Page 2, lines 8 through 11, Both current and new businesses are eligible as long as new jobs are created. 9-2-26-10 definition, the applicant is the employer. Eligible training provider includes the University of Wyoming, community colleges, tribal government, or eligible training providers. New job, newly created, full or part-time job is in priority economic sectors. You can see the definition outlines of what does not qualify as a new job. Program costs and services are outlined, and the Department of Workforce Services on page 8, 19 through 20, administers the program in consultation with the Endow coordinator. Pages 9 through 17, the 9-2-26-11 is eligibility. Partnerships between business, the state, and the training provider to provide employees with education and training. Page 10, 4 through 10, shows the money flows to the training provider, not the employee. Matching program, maximum match is dollar for dollar, funding up to $5,000 for each full-time position and $2,500 for each part-time position. Page 11, 19 through 22, there's a provision to exceed that cap in exceptional circumstances that call for high-cost training. And then funding proportional to the number of jobs provided, and then establishes application requirements, including the submission of a business plan, financial statements, and a hire and training plan. Page 13, 8 through 10, the financial statements are treated as confidential under the Public Records Act. Then establishing contract requirements, including reimbursement if the business leaves Wyoming, and then within a period specified in the contract, which would be a maximum of 2 years, and verification of job creation and annual reporting. And then we go on to providing for adoption of rules and annual reporting by the Department of Workforce Services, page 16, 13 through 21, funding to be dispersed for an agreement, need recommendations of the Department of Workforce Services, certification by the Attorney General that the contract is lawful, and approval by the governor or his designee. Page 18, 9-2-26-01, the Department of Workforce Services expands the duty of the department to include the Wyoming Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Partnership Act, and then establishes the Wyoming Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Partnership Account. Page 19, 16 through 21, the Department of Workforce Director may expend funds for administrative purposes without the approval of the governor. And then on page 20, reappropriates $1.5 million in unencumbered, unobligated funds from the Endow account. These funds were previously earmarked for workforce development. Page 21 through 22, section 4 appropriates $3.5 million from the LISRA. And then page 22, section 5, the Department of Workforce Service may commence rulemaking. And then on page 6, page 22, the rulemaking and limited expenditures are authorized immediately. Funds from the LISRA are available for expenditure starting July 1, 2018. The reappropriated funds are available immediately. As a practical matter, the program must wait on the governor's approval of the 20-year Endow plan, which should be around August of 2018, Mr. Chairman, and as the agreement only fund priority economic sector jobs identified in that plan. So, members of the Senate, that's the bill. I'm going to go on to the Standing Committee Amendment, if we could have that read in.
Standing Senate File 119, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 8.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 119 and ask for your favorable consideration. What you see on the amendment in lines 1 through 5 of the amendment, it's conforming the title to the amendments, and then 8 through 13, deleting what some would consider unfair competition provisions, like these would require that the businesses receiving training for its employees either sell 50% or more of its product outside of Wyoming, or produces something that is not available in Wyoming. 15 through 19, Mr. Chairman, the introduced bill required jobs paying wages meeting or the lesser of 240% of the Wyoming's minimum wage, which would equal about $13 an hour, or the average wage in the county where the employees will be working. And the amendment, we just wanted to remove the 240%. The thinking was the wage should always equal at least the county average. Mr. Chairman, 21 through 31 on the amendment. If the employer leaves early, the bill requires repayment of the state funds, and this adds 4% interest. And then on to, this is to, the next section is to ensure that Department of Workforce Services can require additional consideration in the contracts to enable the state funding to be spent for a public purpose and is not a donation. And then line 33, pages 19, line 8, is a technical cleanup. And then 36 through 40 on the amendment, we shift the funding from the SIPA to the LISRA, consistent with the budget bill changes. And then on page 2, we ensure here that the program does not receive double funding. This reduces the $22.5 million non-earmarked appropriation to the endow account by the $5 million appropriated and reappropriated in this bill. Mr. Chairman, that's the amendment. If there's no questions on the amendment, I'll ask for a positive vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Is there any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 119? Seeing none and hearing the question called, all those in favor of Senator Hastert's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 119, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 119, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, has passed Committee of the Whole. We are back on the Senate file.
Mr. Chairman, that was the bill, and certainly we'll stand for questions.
Any discussion on Senate File 119, Workforce Development Priority Economic Sector Program? Senator Christensen.
I'm wondering if you could go back through the first 30 pages.
Senator Hastert, a do-over?
Nope.
Sounds like no. Any further discussion? Looks like Senator Anderson over there. Senator Anderson.
No, I've just been standing. Mr. Chairman, I want to throw my support to this bill. This is one of the biggest problems Wyoming industries have in this state, and any that are trying to come in, is workforce. And the workforce is trained, skilled laborers. And we have an opportunity in Laramie to pick up one of those organizations and bring it along. And I hope that this bill can help with that and bring that organization up to current standards and bring it along and make it flourish. So on all in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. I'm sorry I didn't see you. You were standing behind the microphone. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I would add my enthusiasm to that of my senator from the central part of the state. The two parts about all of this I'm most enthusiastic about are the training and the air service, but if I had to pick one, it would probably be the training. And I know, it's close second, but we've got several hundred jobs in my town attributable to all the training opportunities that are available at that community college. And that most recent employer that we've all read about, the sporting arms manufacturer, what closed the deal is when they walked into the college and they saw state-of-the-art CNC machines. And the fact that the governor had sufficient funds to backstop any training program that the community college needed to stand up. And that's the forte of those community colleges, correct? It's understanding the training and workforce needs of your community and making sure that you can put those programs together. And whether it's our community college or yours, they have the ability, if they've got the money, to stand up any program 60 to 90 days and get going. So this is probably the single most important thing that we could do is the workforce training. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kinski. Hearing the question called for and seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 119, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 119 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is Senate File 98. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 98, Severance Tax Exemption, an act relating to mine product taxes. Sponsored by Senator Perkins, was referred to Committee Number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, and Perkins. Noes, Senators Rothfuss and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Vice President.
You're trying to get up and not pronounce my name, aren't you?
So, Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File 98, and I ask that you call on the majority floor leader to explain the bill.
Just being respectful, Mr. Yeah. Vice President. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the, for your consideration, Senate File 98. Senate File 98 is an attempt to see if we can spur some additional exploration and drilling of natural gas and oil in the state. I provided for you on your desk, there's a couple of handouts. One is a small pamphlet. Another one is a chart. And the bar chart shows the effective tax rate of, after 10 years with respect to the years of production, what the effective tax rate is on various states with whom we compete for the deployment of capital by oil and gas exploration companies. And so what the bill does is try and this Oklahoma has something not exactly the same but a similar program to provide to spur production, particularly with the horizontal drilling. As you look at the horizontal drilling and the production out of it, what happens is you have most of your production, you get great production the first couple of years, and then it's a fairly steep decline production curve over the subsequent years as that goes out, and eventually those become stripper wells or they're plugged and abandoned. What the bill does is a very simple process. It simply takes the severance tax of 6% on oil and gas for new wells and drops it in half in years 3 and 4 after the production has started. So it simply is a tax reduction to have in years, again, 3 and 4, so we get the best years of the production, 1 and 2, there's the full severance tax load. After in years 3 and 4, there's a 0.5% reduction in severance tax. It keeps intact the 1.5% that's required by the Constitution. That still is there. That'll continue to flow to where it's supposed to flow. And then there's another 1.5% on that is still there. Wyoming does have the highest effective tax rate on oil and gas production in our region, and it's some of the highest in the country. When you add that with respect to the federal permitting problems that we have in our state that don't necessarily occur in our competitor states, it provides an additional burden. According to a certain economic study out by folks there, depending on the price per barrel, the effective tax rate in Wyoming that includes severance and gross products taxes on a new oil and gas well is nearly 12%. Compare that to neighbors just to the south of us across the state line, and that tax rate is about 6.5%. The point of this bill is simply make it isn't it, it make it competitive. It's not a silver bullet, but it may spur some additional drilling. You see a fiscal note on the back there is approximately about a $6,000 negative fiscal note if that production was applied. But, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, my understanding is that a new oil well will generate somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million of additional revenue to the state of Wyoming. And so if we drill about, we get about one new well because of this, it's about a break even according to the fiscal note. And just incidentally, when just as the time this came out, there was an oil and gas firm that's effective here, and they said that if this bill passes, they would move three additional rigs to the state of Wyoming. Now, I don't have that in writing. They didn't sign that contract. But when they said this, that this would cause them to bring three additional rigs to the state of Wyoming. Keep in mind that with the horizontal drilling that we've got, one rig drills approximately about, can drill up to 16 wells per year. So in 2016, Wyoming was at the lowest point of drilling rigs in our history. We have lots of competition in everywhere from Pennsylvania to Ohio to Illinois to Oklahoma to Texas to Colorado and other places. And if we can spur our activity and get additional revenue, I think this would be appropriate. If we want to move this bill forward, I think there may be an amendment or two. I haven't seen it come out, but there's some amendments we can do that we do this. A couple things that have been talked about. We don't have amendments out here today, but we can certainly put a sunset date on it. You could move the years back, so it's years 4 and 5, and maybe you can move the dates. You can also put a sunset date on it. And one thing that we ought to do, and if it's not, one thing we ought to also look at to settle this once for all is we could also consider doing a study. To do out and have an independent study review and find out what our effective tax rate is when you take the severance, you take the ad valorem tax, you take all that and find out really where are we in the tax comparison with our neighbors. And that's another worthwhile amendment that could come. But I ask you to give us some serious consideration. This time we're talking about economic diversity. Part of that is we don't want to forget the folks that brought us to the dance in the first place. And that's oil and gas. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Kinski.
To the senator from the center part of the state behind me, I'd say I'm okay with a study as long as it's performed by a task force. Can we? I like the chart. I like the exhibit. Could we get a repeat of this that shows what our net effective rate is? If this were enacted, that would be helpful. I don't know if you've got an estimate. And then the other fact, which is fascinating, I'd like to learn more about that. If somebody can give us something, whether it's from the State Oil and Gas Commission or whatever, as to that $5 million figure, that would be very helpful as well. I've received a lot of comment on it, on this. A lot of folks have definitely made up their minds, and I'd like to have the facts that I can justify my support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple other things to add to this, and the majority floor leader did a great job of laying this out to talk about the pros and cons of it, but one of the things that I think is happening in America, and certainly in the lower 48, is there's only so many E&P dollars out there to be spent to develop this production. And when you look at, as a board member, if I was a board member, a medium-sized independent or a larger independent, I would look at all these things as I consider it. And one of the things that you consider when you're talking about production is you have to have access to take that oil to market, i.e. pipelines. And what's happened with the plays going on to our neighbor to the north and east in the Dakotas, and North Dakota, and then the Bakken play, then you even have a lot of the pressure from Canada. And what you see is a differential in the price of crude relative to what NYMEX may be and what the producers receive. And just to share a what-if for you, the Canadian crude coming from their oil sands, you know, had some issues with the deliverability and takeaway capacity, and they had a deduct of $20 a barrel off NYMEX for their crude. Now, part of that had to do with the type of crude they had. But what's going on right now with a huge amount of drilling going on and activity in the Bakken play, the pipes that are going away from there are at capacity. There are new pipes that are being considered, and they have open pipes, open seasons, and most of that production is being called for and taken by Bakken crude. And if we're going to have our oil in Wyoming get into that, you know, these pipelines need to see that there's going to be increased activity. I think this will provide that increased activity. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I might have privilege of the floor on another issue.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for disclosure to the Senate, I am involved in the oil and gas business. I consider myself a class of persons, and I will be voting on this. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, is that, you know, the company that I'm affiliated with, we do not have any APDs in effect to drill horizontal wells in the Powder River Basin at this time. That's not what this is about. This is, I think, a good thing for the state, and we're not actively involved in doing it. I just wanted the Senate to know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nice pronunciation, too. What I would say is that I was a no vote, and I just want to explain that I truly believe it's the price. I was a no vote in committee. I truly believe it's the price of the commodity and whether or not it is high enough to allow the drilling. I don't think giving a couple dollars break on every barrel will incentivize anybody to start new production and do more wells than they planned.
Any further discussion? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the other no vote, but this is an interesting concept, and I think it has a lot of merit. My concern is that no data came along with it, no studies, no curves, nothing that says if you lower the percentage this much, there will be this much more economic activity. And, Mr. Chairman, I can assure you that no oil company would take this deal. They would not invest in an area without knowing beforehand how much money they're going to make. They wouldn't gamble on $5 million based on the assumption that, hey, this might work. They would have a lot of information and a lot of data going into the decision. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit disappointed that we haven't seen that from the advocates, not just here, but really from industry, who came in and said, yeah, if you did this, we might bring some more rigs. That's what we heard in testimony. And I asked in private conversation, well, what assurances can we have? How can we know? Can we write this in a way where it really only kicks in if more rigs come in, more drilling happens, and we end up getting a net revenue increase for the state of Wyoming as a result of this? Well, maybe, but, you know, how would that work? So, Mr. Chairman, I think the concept's fine if it's a sure thing. If it's simply a tax cut at a time when we can't seem to pass any other additional revenues, we know we're in a situation of revenue downturn, we need every dollar we have, and we know this will cost us $5 million with no guarantee of success, then I'm very uncomfortable. But again, it's possible that we could structure this in a way where it only kicks in if we do have a net revenue increase. But, Mr. Chairman, the only studies we've seen is that this doesn't have an effect. And those studies have been questioned, and there's consternation as to whether or not those studies are accurate. But the data out there from the Economic Analysis Division indicates that there's no correlation between whether these prices go up or down and the production, the revenue, or the rig count. So far, the only data I've seen, Mr. Chairman, indicates that this isn't necessarily going to be successful, and it will cost us $5 million relative to not doing anything. And with that as the sum total of the information, I'm unwilling to support this. If we can get more guarantee, more certainty, I like the idea from the majority floor leader of having a study where we really understand these numbers before we dive in. That's a great idea. Maybe we can do the study, put the timeline off with the sunset so that the study comes out before this goes into effect. Have a legislative session where if the study comes back and says, you know, this is a bad idea, we haven't lost anything. I think that's a potential path forward. But as written, it's an awful lot to gamble for no certainty from the industry when industry itself probably wouldn't make this gamble, and I don't think we should either. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we did study this one time. And, Mr. Chairman, it's been quite a while ago, but in a budget amendment, we created a a working group, task force, whatever you have it, to contract with the university to provide a study. The study was produced. It's called the Mineral Tax Incentives, Mineral Production in the Wyoming Economy. Believe it or not, Mr. Chairman, that was in December 1st, 2000. Pays to keep old people around. You know that? It actually does. Mr. Chairman, it's a very path-breaking study. And if you guys notice, we haven't had a lot of requests for severance tax breaks in your tenure here. But in my early days, we had a lot. It was happening all the time. People were saying, cut the severance tax rate a little bit and production will explode. And we were facing this decision. So we just said, well, let's study this issue. And it was actually my amendment on the budget. And a task force was created. Senator Bill Hawks was the fellow that led that task force. I was on that, and I think it was six members. And a study was produced by the University of Wyoming Department of Economics. The study had four people on it, two professors and two graduate students. The study came out with results that said, for a lot of good reasons, which I think you'll understand, small changes in the severance taxes, you know, going from, I know it seems like a lot, but just a couple of percentage points or four percentage points don't have a lot of impact on two areas. We specifically asked them to look at the net taxes that would be produced for Wyoming. In other words, if we lower severance tax rates, but firms increase production so much they pay all sorts of other taxes that would offset the reduction, and we also looked at it for the prospect of net economic activity, Mr. Chairman, and to see if we could make up the losses that the severance tax reduction would occur. The study very conclusively said no. For a lot of reasons, Wyoming's severance tax, which are production taxes, don't have a lot of effect. So if you can increase them up or decrease them down, they don't change production and the producers' activities enough to offset the losses or the gains from the taxes. Mr. President, I got to tell you, or Mr. Chairman, I want to tell you a little bit more about that study. It was a fabulous study. It went to the American Economic Review, which is the highest, most prestigious economic journal. If I had an article published in that journal, I would like be on cloud nine. But I got to tell you something. The study also went into another area. And a graduate student who was part of this study, they looked at the checkerboard. And I'm aside a little bit, but I'm going to tell you, I want to defend this study. In the checkerboard, they tried to determine if drilling behavior was determined by environmental regulations. And this is the checkerboard across Wyoming where there's private land and public land. The graduate student faked the data for that study. He did. And you just don't possibly do this. This was a small segment of the bigger study that had fabulous results, but a lot of people are out there saying, well, that data was all faked. What was faked was the checkerboard analysis, and they had to do a retraction in the Journal of American Economic Review. That's the worst thing that can ever happen to someone, to have to retract a journal article. But the rest of the study, which was what we commissioned, this was a spinoff from that study. The rest of the study has stood and has been reviewed and stands today. Sure, it could be updated. But what they determined was these changes in production taxes don't work because producers largely make decisions based upon or exploration activity based upon prices. That's the most important thing. We've heard somebody else mention that today. Secondly, there are also reasons why in Wyoming it doesn't work. And it's partly because, first off, it's not an example of the total tax burden. We heard discussion earlier from our fine colleague from Casper that the Wyoming has the highest production taxes. That may very well be. But Wyoming doesn't have a state income tax or a corporate income tax, and every other state does. At one time, Texas didn't. But Texas has been experimenting with a gross receipts tax. I don't know how that affects oil and gas. I honestly don't. So Texas may not be an appropriate comparison. But of states that have an income tax, only Nevada, Wyoming and South Dakota. We don't have an income tax. And I'm not, I can tell you, I don't know how that gross receipt tax applies to Texas. But that's a different ball of wax. People come in here and say, talk about production taxes when you don't talk about the total tax burden. Another reason why it diminishes the effectiveness is because our production taxes are deductible from the federal income tax. So we give a little bit of a break, but it actually works opposite to the income tax burden. The higher our production taxes are, the less federal income tax they pay. The opposite is true as well. But that diminishes the behavior that a producer would look at to try to decide whether to drill wells or not. The conclusion of the study was that we lose money either way, and that this resource, which exists and belongs not to us, but to future generations, it's a legacy of Wyoming, and these taxes that we impose on this resource are to protect that legacy for future generations of Wyoming citizens. And it's so important that we should not do this. Should we turn this into a study bill? Amen. It's been a long time since we actually drilled down on it. There's probably better data. We could overcome some of the challenges. I think that would be a fabulous idea. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really enjoy getting these kind of discussions with my colleague from across the way in Fremont County. Just a few things for the senators to ponder. First of all, as I understood what my colleague was saying, that, you know, it's not a big enough break. We should give a bigger break. That way it would have an impact. I don't think that's what he really meant, but that was something I would sure consider. The second thing, he talks about the study, and what he says about the study and the depth that went into it and everything is true. Nothing, no question about that. But that was in 2000. How many shale plays and horizontal wells were drilled in 2000? The whole situation has changed. You know, as a producer, as a person that decides where to spend his E&P money, when you drill a horizontal well, it's not a matter of will you have production or not. It's not like a dry hole like what you experience now when you decide how to spend your money. You know you're going to have production. You know you're going to have oil or gas. You may not know the volumes. So what you do, if you're the board of directors, your internal rate of return, and these companies have to look at that for their shareholders. Most of them are public companies. And so that IRR that they have, there's a difference in how they look at it. And so, too, you know, the severance tax break has an impact on that. You know, you talk about regulations, and truly they have an effect in Wyoming, a negative effect, no question about it. And when you sit there and you think about, you know, you have to deal with federal surface, federal minerals versus fee surface, fee minerals in other states, that has an impact. That's why the dollars are not being spent in other areas. Well, why is the Powder River Basin kind of heating up? It's not because of the price of oil has gone up necessarily. It's because the Bakken play, the Delaware Basin play, the Utica play, all these plays have been driven so the price to get in and buy the leases is incredibly high, and the numbers don't work. So there's an opportunity, instead of those people playing those other plays in other states that, by the way, have better tax climate, they don't have to deal with the federal rules and regulations for federal leases, and they're looking at the Powder River Basin. The most important thing that my colleague made is it is price sensitive, no question about it, and it works that way. But you also have the fact that you have the takeaway capacity of crude relative to that amount of money that you're deducted because you can't get it to the market. You know, there's some states out there that have no severance tax and no ad valorem, and that's the market we compete in. You know, I'm not sure that we should. There's got to be a better way to tie it so we know that it really are new wells. If all we're doing is paying money for wells that would be drilled anyway, it's not a good idea. And so I would ask that my colleagues that don't like this idea to work with us to see how we can tie it up so we know that these are truly new wells. Because if we provide an incentive and new wells aren't drilled, it's not a good idea. And I agree with that. But there's a lot of things in this that have an effect on it that I think we ought to have some consideration given to. And maybe, just maybe, we can come up with an idea if this goes through Committee of the Whole on second or third reading to tie it down more. And I'm all for that. So I would ask that you vote for the bill, and maybe we can come up with some language that ties it up so we know that we really are getting new wells drilled. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This interesting bill. We do have time to study this. This doesn't take place until the third and fourth year of the well, which, if you look at the fiscal note, that's fiscal year 2021 is actually when this starts. So we do have time to work at this and study it, but what we need right now is the gesture that we will do this with wells that are starting. So we do have a little time to look at this and do something about it. I'll tell you some personal experience. I got in on a minerals lease group, and 7 years ago, I looked back to see what how long ago that was. 7 years ago, we hired a landman out of state to invest this money in leases. And at that time, the Niobrara was hitting. We were all for Wyoming, and actually Wyoming and northern Colorado. Our professional came in and said, no, you guys tax too much. Go to Oklahoma and Texas. We did that. 7 years later, it's incredibly successful. He was right. Our taxes are too high. So I think we need something to bring the industry back to our state. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I was going to stay out of this, but that the one comment there really concerns me. About the time we have. If we pass an incentive and then we come back in a year or two and cut it back, we'll never be believed again. We got to get it right the first time.
Senator Burns.
Yeah, Mr. President, I've got a question. Since the good senator from Lander was strolling down memory lane, I remember that study, and I remember that from the budget bill. And before that, for a couple of years before that, there were a number of incentive bills like that were put forward. And I was actually, was the floor manager for one of them. I didn't like most of them, but this one I did like, and it was to give a good tax incentive to wildcat wells. The idea being that it would hopefully incentivize exploring to look for new fields. Most oil wells that are put in where they already have proven oil, so they know they're going to be getting the oil. What we want is to find the new resources. So I would ask the sponsors, why are they structuring this way rather than at wildcat wells?
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I think thank you. First, while we're strolling down memory lane, I think both those bills were sponsored by my mother in the house. And the wildcat well and the other one was stripper wells. And I remember I was long out of the house by then, but I remember her talking about those. And my recollection was, particularly with stripper wells, they were successful. That it actually did generate additional revenue because it kept by reducing the tax on those lower producing wells, you could keep them going longer. And in essence, that's a little bit what this is. Those production curves fall off so fast in these horizontal wells. It's not, you know, and you gotta go back. I mean, if we go back, you go back 7 years, 8 years, that's when the horizontal drilling revolution really took off. I mean, back in 2000, I think everybody's still trying to figure out. Everybody knew there was a lot of oil in tight sands and shale and weren't quite sure how to get there. And in fact, it was in the late 90s, I remember reading reports that it was never going to be feasible because it just took too much energy. You actually would expend more BTUs in extracting the oil from those tight sands and those oil shales than you would actually get out of it. So it was just never going to be fiscally feasible. Well, that's all. Obviously, that game has changed. But what you do have, as those production curves go down, is provide some relief for them because two things happen. One is, will you get more production? That's the idea. But the other thing happens is the production may also go along longer. And quite frankly, if we do that, getting 3 or 4% of something is a whole lot better than getting 6% of nothing.
Further discussion? Hearing none. Well, Senator Case.
We don't lose if we leave it in the ground, because it's available for the people that will sit in this room down the road. And if we take it out of the ground, yeah, hopefully not in this room, for God's sake. If we take it out of the ground, we ought to get some money to put in the bank so that we can compensate them for their birthright. This oil, this gas doesn't belong to us. And we're looking at decisions. I can't tell you what the price of oil is going to be in 2 years. I think I did write an article in a book about what determines that, but I can't tell you what that'll be. I'm no better or worse than the majors to do that. But I can tell you that if they do take it out of the ground, we ought to get our fair share because it doesn't belong to us. It belongs to our legacy.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 98, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 98 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 99. Oh, division, I'm sorry. Division was called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Senate File 98 has passed Committee of the Whole. It looked like it was 16-8. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 99. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 99, State Fairgrounds Horse Racing Events, an act relating to the state fairgrounds, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. No, Senator Anselmi Dalton. Senator Emmerich, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Dockstader. Excused, Senator Hastert. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation of due pass on Senate File 99, State Fairgrounds Horse Racing Event. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that that be read in.
Senate File 99, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that amendment, and for the scintillating discussion of this bill, I would yield to Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, fellow senators. I'll try to get this as fast as I can so we don't kill bills behind me. I'm going to do something you all really like to do. You've been itching to kill something. So I'm going to actually call a question on this amendment and ask you to vote no on it so that we can fix the bill. We'll start right off with a no vote. We kind of fumbled things up. We've got another amendment coming to fix them. So let's kill the first one, and we'll start with the explanation afterwards.
Question? We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99, please say aye. Well, all those opposed? Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99 has failed. We're back on the bill.
Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Driscoll.
Thank all of you. I hope that's your one no vote on this bill. We got it out of the way now. We're ready to go. Mr. Chairman, there's a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. It's numbered as Number 2. I would like it read in, please.
We have a Number 1 and a Number 2.
Oh, there's one there. I guess we better read number one in and kill it, too, then.
Senate File 99, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment, or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how that got out of the hen house and got away, but I would encourage the body to. I actually have to move for adoption of the amendment, please. And I would encourage you once again. I lied. Let's kill one more.
Senator Driscoll,
yes.
You can withdraw the amendment.
I will withdraw the amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I have committee amendment, committee of the whole amendment number 2 read in, please?
Senate File 99, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 3.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I would move for adoption of the amendment. Folks, I'm not going to go through the amendment. I'm going to ask you to go to your desk. We had something handed out that looks kind of like a bill. It says Driscoll's Holistic Bill on it. That bill has Motherhood and Apple Pie wrote on it. This is what it will look like when you read the amendments into it. I can take the time and spending a half hour reading these amendments in, or will this go to the bill? It's basically a substitute bill is what it amounts to. We couldn't get one done. So what happened, folks, is we did a bill, put it together, and when we got to committee, we found out that we had some problems with the bill with some of the industry folks and also with our regulator. So we sat down and went together with all of them. We brought in county people, state people, both competitors that are involved in the horse racing, and we sat down and made this bill where it absolutely works well and everybody supports it. In fact, they came out of it pretty excited. I don't know of anybody at this point that's not on board, county, city, racing entities otherwise. What this bill does, we all know what's happened with State Fair. We've had a heck of a time getting State Fair funded.
Mr. Vice President. Oh, I'm sorry.
I just want to know what we're working on, and if we haven't voted on the amendments, then we're still working on the original bill, and we're putting the amendments in, and you can explain the amendments, but I don't want to go to this substitute bill, which we have never voted on, and have it be the bill that we're talking about.
Perfect.
Good point, Mr. Vice President. Senator Driscoll, let's take care of the amendment.
It is not a substitute bill. The reason it has no bill number on it, says Driscoll's Holistic Bill, is if I take the time to read these in, that is what the bill reads exactly. And I'm happy to read them in, but really what it does is if I take all the time and you guys try to track these in, when you're done with the read-in, it will read the same as this bill.
Senator Driscoll, if,
bill with amendment.
If you would move the amendment, and then we can vote on it, and then that would then be the bill that we're working on.
Mr. Chairman, I moved the amendment. I would ask for a favorable vote on the amendment. I was going to try to explain it so they might vote for it easier, but we'll do it this way.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 99? Hearing none. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 99, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 99 has passed. We are on the bill now.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the help getting there. It saves a lot of time with me getting muddled up. That's what happened in committee as well. It's hard to track it in. So we're back to State Fair. We've had a lot of trouble. We're trying to work to find some creative methods to get State Fair additional financing, maybe even get it off the general fund at some point in time. So what this does is we were approached with the ability. Years ago, they used to race horses at the State Fair and on the grounds, and that track's gone away over time. This bill moves back in. It puts track back in State Fair, at least potential. The key parts of the bill, as it says, is in Section A, the board may authorize, which doesn't say they're going to, says they may authorize on State Fairgrounds conduction of paramutual events, conducted with all the rules and everything. A couple of things we've done. It says that the events will not be conducted during State Fair. Everything's going to be shut down with paramutual during State Fair. There is no county election. We spend quite a little time around the county. Best of my knowledge, we have no opposition. I can have someone stand behind me. We did quite a little work on it. We don't know of anything out there, so we're skipping past the election on the thing and lets it run. Section B, revenue generated from paramutual events conducted on the state fairgrounds go into the state fair account. So it goes directly into the account, which is a change off what normally happens. Section C is basically says any simulcast or any other type of events they have exactly the same thing, allows them to do it, and runs it back into the state fair account. Page 3 is basically all existing statute other than tracking in the paramutual statutes. Going on to page 4, right now the way the track events and the paramutual events run is there's a set amount in there that's been there. This actually does, and if you go down to the underline on page 4, it says, excluding live and historic paramutual events conducted at state fairgrounds and in Converse County, which will be credited to the state fair account. This allows the committee that's state fair, it may be the existing board, or if a certain bill goes through, it may be a different board, but it allows them to negotiate with the paramutual contractors that are out there. It's not a new one. Set the amounts out and try to do it. And they want this to work well for state fair. Section 3 is the advisory board. Says they're going to contract for a feasibility study. We're not going to jump out there and build a track or do anything that goes unless we've got a feasibility study that says it works. The feasibility study, they think, is going to cost around the $50,000 mark. We allocated up to $100,000 out of the paramutual account, and we have done a total appropriation out of the paramutual account of $2 million that will reside with the state fair. Folks, that's the entire bill. Really what it does is give state fair a very solid chance of being able to have a revenue source that supplements it, makes fair good, doesn't do anything we don't do anywhere else right now. We've got a number of tracks around the state, does the same thing, and it's for the kids, and it's for the state of Wyoming. We're all in it together, and I would stand for questions.
Any further questions? Senator Anselmi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, in committee, I was the no vote. I was against apple pie and motherhood, I guess. But in reality, I'm not. I'm not against that. I would like to explain to the committee my concerns and have them hear it clearly. What happens in this bill on page 2 in the holistic version under Romanet 2 on page 2, no county election shall be required under the statute. That was required. That was required for the different counties to make sure that people want to have these events in their community. There's a reason why we put things to a vote of the local people. That's called local control, and they have the authority to decide these things. Maybe everyone on the committee told me they could guarantee how people feel, and maybe they can. Maybe everyone in Douglas wants this. But the point is, they have to decide if they want to have racing and betting in their community. That's only fair. In addition, what happens under this bill is we haven't even done a feasibility study. And unfortunately, there's this big metal building there that sort of gets the way of the track, and there's concerns about that. So my concern is to deposit $2 million of our funds and give it to a board and then conduct a feasibility study and say maybe it doesn't work. These things have gone belly up before when private people have done it. I think it's better to conduct a feasibility study and assess whether or not this is actually going to work. I just think rushing things through, it's the taxpayers' money. Normally what happens with this money when it's put in the paramutual account is it goes to the paramutual commission, and it's distributed to the counties where it's located, is my understanding. I could be wrong on that, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, but the point of the matter is the money that's in the paramutual account that they're taking and putting into the state fund account is money that was raised by these people that operate in various cities and counties that you are all familiar with. And so suddenly just to take and say, well, we're going to put it here, doesn't seem very fair when the money was raised other places. I know that they say they got together with everyone. Maybe they did, but I just think we should take caution. This bill was rushed through, put together. That's why you're getting a holistic bill at the last hour. I think the process and regulations that the Paramutual Commission has set up and that they have should be, you know, they fingerprint, they background check the applicants. There have been issues, unfortunately, not that I'm trying to be Debbie Downer, but I am. Sorry, everyone can give me a new name. But there have been issues with the state fair, and I just feel that we shouldn't just rush off and say, let's give money to it because it feels good. It does feel good. I want to be the happy camper, too. I don't like to be Debbie Downer. I'm not that person usually. So please take some caution and concerns because this bill is a last minute. Let's rush it all in. Let's avoid the vote. Let's not do a feasibility study. Well, we'll do one, but we still want to put the money in the account kind of thing. So it's rush to judgment. Be careful, folks.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to give, I guess, a perspective from the community that actually supports the Safe Fair. And I just point out this is something that we've always done. The city of Douglas, Commerce County, every year, not only provides cash donations to the fair, they also provide in-kind maintenance, in-kind support. So having these funds, which would normally go to a state account, instead go to the fair, is perfectly in line with what we are already doing. It's also important to distinguish, and the sponsor of the bill can correct me if I'm wrong, but this only applies to state fairgrounds themselves. Or it's not every last entity in Converse County is suddenly going to have off-track betting or live races there without a vote. If it's outside the state fairgrounds, it still has to go through the election process. So that's something that's still going to play out. But it's important to acknowledge also that the state fairgrounds are state facilities. And, I think everybody wants to see the state fair succeed. This is one way to do that, to return to our heritage in eastern Wyoming. And I just speak on and for the bill. I appreciate the concerns from my colleague from Sweetwater County. But there's no outside of the fairgrounds, there's nothing that's being circumvented here. And there is going to be, this is something that has changed since we heard it in committee, there is going to be a feasibility study at the outset. So we're not just going to throw a track on there and hope that people show up. There's going to be a feasibility study. And if it's not feasible, then it's not going to happen. The last thing that anybody wants, especially our own community, is to use these state funds and then have nobody use them. That would be embarrassing for everybody, especially the members of the local community. So just point out those two distinctions that, there still be elections for the countywide events and that we're going to have a feasibility study first.
Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, this is a great idea, and I hope it can help the state fair grounds to break even or make some money. I was in another city in Wyoming. We ran a race for 5 years and didn't do very well with it, and we came up with a trick from Ken Schiffer, who was Senator Schiffer's dad, and we made money real good for 1 year. They discontinued that, and 3 years later, the horse racing was done in that city. The difference here that we didn't have is that they have some funds coming from the historic paramutual events, and I think that's probably going to help this situation. When I look at this paragraph, however, it says that 1% of the total amount wagered attributed to historical paramutual events, and it's shown by the report, is going to be transferred to the city and county. I think that's already done. I'm not sure. But then it goes on to say, excluding live and historic paramutual events conducted on the state fairgrounds and in Converse County, which shall be credited as state fair account. Now, I'm thinking that one of the deals is showing during the state fair, maybe, but the other sounds like it's all the time in Converse County. So I wondered if we could clear that up. If it's all the time in Converse County and it's full time on the state fairgrounds, that could really make that race profitable. Thank you.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer these kind of in order as best I can, and hopefully return Debbie Downer into dancing, Debbie, when we're done, because this is going to get better. Number one, probably the first thing, we sat and worked with Paramutual, the head of it. All their rules are going to be followed, top to bottom. Doesn't matter what rule they've got, if it's fingerprinting, if it's putting guys on the track, whatever it is. I can tell you we walked out of this. The head of the Paramutual Commission is absolutely 100% on board. I'm comfortable saying that. He knows that we're going to follow the rules. We're going to race correctly there. As far as the funds that go, those are not funds that are not dictated. Right now, they're trapped. They're a portion of them. It's not the funds that go to cities and towns. It's the funds that go into a pot, and those will be dealt with down the road. But I can tell you the people that put those funds in the pot, the two organizations are both, once again, 100% in favor of those funds going back out into State Fair. and they'd like for the $2 million to stay. I will represent to you we spend general fund money on the state fair, and this will probably alleviate if it doesn't work. If it does work, it really works. And then probably last, going to the 1%. This is the first time, and they've all agreed to it, they're going to negotiate with that new board what the percentage of the payout is, both on historic and paramutual. The wording on it says they get to negotiate their own rate. It goes 100% back to state fair. There will be no county share. There'll be no city share. County and city have agreed. They're happy with that, I believe. I haven't talked to the county myself, but I think a person there has. The mayor of the city testified they would love to have that money go back in. They support it anyway. So it's going to be fun. The last part of the wording says county. So it says if they do vote to do historic horse racing in the county, that the money goes to the state fair fund, and they've agreed to that, both sides, once again. So we're trying to really beef up the state fair, have a world-class track, assuming the feasibility says we can do it. And, you know, interestingly enough, it was a kind of a shuffle-together bill. But you know what? It got done. We put together every possible entity that dealt with it other than the vote in the county, and every single one of them walked out and said, this is a good deal, and we like it, and we want it. I represent to you the missing the vote in the county is kind of interesting. State Fairgrounds has been state property since it started State Fair 100 and however many years ago. This is a state facility that lays within the county. I think it's a good deal. It's a good deal for Wyoming, and it's a good deal for the kids.
Any further discussion?
Debbie Downs.
Mr. Vice President.
So it says in here and in Converse County. So it says excluding live and historical paramutual events conducted on the state fairgrounds and in Converse County. And then the page before says no county elections shall be required. So in other words, you can gamble in Converse County and they don't have any vote on this. Is this what this means? And I would ask the sponsor when he gets a chance.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Kinski.
Can we give him all the questions at once? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I want to add to my friend from Campbell County. I'm sorry, Senator Driscoll, but the shuffle up, hurry up bill, we got to slow this thing down and it's late. So my idea is let's kill it and study it, because here's what we're doing. There's all kinds of cross references to all kinds of statutes here, and it's really rough to track. But basically, a paramutual event means, I've been through this in Sheridan. Everybody thinks it's live horse racing. But you got to go to 1125.102, and this may be a great idea. AV, the last part of which, notwithstanding such and such and such and such, the commission may authorize and promulgate rules providing for paramutual wagering on events that have previously occurred, using an electronic system or device that affords an opportunity for the exercise of skill or judgment where the outcome is not completely controlled by chance alone. Now, the commission does not call them slot machines, but they're slot machines in my estimate. And it may be a great idea, and it will generate a lot of money for the fairgrounds. It will, because my policemen have told me of the stacks of bills that are in the back rooms of these places when they walk through, and I've heard from the horse racing people who are enthusiastic because all the money that comes from this, or almost all, goes for prizes to encourage live horse racing. But I just want to make sure that we understand what we're voting on. And so then, after you take that reference, then I'm not on the holistic bill, and I'm trying to track through all these different statutes. Page 3 of the non-holistic bill, which may have been amended by the amendment, but it still looks to me like it's in the holistic bill, says, let me see, there's too much here. Here we go. It's in the holistic bill, page 3. The board shall not permit any gambling device to be operated on the grounds except as provided by 1110-118, which are the machines, which are the slot machines authorized for paramutual betting. And then there's another section here that references 1125-105-D, which is the state statute that defines the crime of gambling, and I'm trying to see whether that's exempted there, too, because no gambling device will she be operating on the grounds except as provided in 1110-118, which is the slot machines, but the commission steadfastly maintains they are not gambling. although the first wave of machines that went in were all confiscated and the Supreme Court said they were slot machines, and so we've got a different set of slot machines. So I just, you know, and I'm, again, I know I'm going to hear from all the horse racing people thinking somehow I'm anti-horse racing. I'm not. I just want us to, this is just too fast, too quick, too last minute. This needs to be, we need time to vet this thing, folks.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just to educate my fellow senator from Sheridan County, these are not slot machines. These are historical racing kiosks. If you hit the buttons as you want, you will get the touts as to the horses and so forth. You just don't know when or where that race was. Now, there's also another button that says you can just skip all that and let the machine pick best for you. And so that's where you get the resemblance to a slot machine. This is all perfectly legal. This is all actually a good idea. By the way, it wasn't a Supreme Court decision that said that these were gambling. There was one aspect of some of the machines that had a double or nothing kind of thing on it, and it was an attorney general's opinion that portion was gambling. So out of prevalence of caution, the Parimutuel Commission shut them all down to make sure that they were perfectly legal, and actually took a few months before they came back. Now the horse racing people will tell you that they don't make any money on the live horse racing, but the kiosks, the historical racing, that's what provides the money for the live horse racing and for the horse breeders. It's the horse breeders and the horsey people will tell you that this has been a savior to them and to the horse industry. And there are people actually coming from regionally, from states all around us, to come for the live horse racing events because of the money involved in live horse racing. It has revived the horse industry in the state of Wyoming, which I think is a wonderful thing. On the other hand, we have, well, not even on the other hand, the reason that the good senator from Devil's Tower brought this thing, we've been struggling for a few years now with the state fair. They've been losing money. There's questions about the management. We have passed a bill, or we're in the process of passing a bill, to set up an entirely new governing structure for them. Well, let's also give them the opportunity to make some money out of this. One of the results from the Attorney General's opinion is that the Parimutuel Commission has not allowed any new horse racing locations since then. So this would be the first one since then. And the people of Converse County and the people of Douglas really want this. Keep in mind, the state fair is the point of pride for that town. They are proud of it, and they will do anything to help it.
Further discussion? Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of years ago, the Judiciary Committee looked at gambling around the state, and we went to Gillette one day and spent about 2 hours with both the machine builder and also the regulators, regulators of the law that oversee these. And I'm here to tell you, when people use the word, it's a slot machine, and we have people listening out there on the Internet, these are not slot machines. They are games of skill, and you can apply skill or you can apply no skill, exactly like if you're at live racing playing the Parimutuel. And so I just want to make sure that people don't hear that and actually think, oh, we do have slot machines, we do have gambling. It's not the same thing, and it's been proven over and over.
Senator Landon. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to rise real quickly and support this bill. This actually came out of several conversations we had in the Appropriations Committee, and I commend the sponsor. He's done a lot of work in a short period of time, and sometimes bills do come at the last minute. And I think we move this bill forward. I know we can work it as it goes through the process, but I think it has a chance to really rectify a situation in Converse County. I think it's a good effort, and I think we can make it even better as we go. But I urge us to pass this through committee of the whole. Thank you,
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, just a handful of comments. One, if you read the bill, and if you actually want to read it and track it, folks, let's pass it and you can read it through, because I can tell you, this bill tracks, it matches, it's done right. When you sit down and read it through, you're going to find out that we don't do anything with gambling. There's a prohibition against gambling now called on state fairgrounds. I didn't touch that. It's not touched in the deal. If the state or the state attorney general feels like there's gambling going on, it's still illegal at the state fair. They're doing something that's been considered legal all across the state of Wyoming. For the good pilot friend of mine from Campbell County, he's absolutely right on one part and wrong on another. It does include Converse County as a county in it, but if they want them anywhere other than on the fairgrounds, they have to vote it in. And the bad news is, I guess, for them, if they're voting it in for money for the town, the money still goes back to the state fair. That's what the city asked us to do. It's what we did with the county. So they feel like it's a good spend of their money. They do just like the state does. They funnel their money into those fairgrounds. They feel like this helps it be self-supporting. Folks, we've probably got $50 or $100 million invested in the state fairgrounds and all the different stuff that's there. It's sure over $10 million. It's having a hard time surviving. This is a means that we found that very rarely do you find when you're doing something that's generating money that everybody's in favor of it. And I'm going to tell you, other than some people other places in the state that don't like whatever they want to call machines, we don't have anybody that showed up at committee. We haven't had anybody else. We have all the industry folks. We have the flat track people and a lot of people excited about having some good live horse racing back and sport and state fair. I'd ask for you to move this on. Let's not debate on committee of the whole on the thing. Go home, research it. If you don't like it, we'll sit down and talk about it at second reading. Let's do some amendments. We need to.
Further discussion. Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 99. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 99 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 117. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 117, School Finance Amendments 3, an act relating to school finance, sponsored by Senator Peterson, was referred to Committee Number 12, returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Perkins, and Von Flater. Noes, Senators Hastert and Rothfuss. Senator Bebout, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 117. I'll yield to the sponsor, Senator from Sheridan County, or Senator from Cowley.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can dispense with the committee, same committee. I would move Do I need my chairman of appropriations to move this, or the standing committee amendment?
I can do it.
I would move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 117 and ask the body's favor for consideration. This basically is a removal of the $15 million appropriation.
Senator Peterson, let's have that read in.
Okay. Please read that in, please.
Senate File 117, standing committee amendment number 1, page 1, line 6.
Can you move it?
I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 117 and ask for the body's favor for consideration. This is the amendment that removes the $15 million hardship adjustment for these reductions that we're proposing in Senate File 117. And I'll explain later as we dispense with this amendment. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 117. Is there any further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 117, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 117 is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move.
Senator Peterson, we need him read in if you're going to move any other amendment.
Well, there's a committee of the whole amendment number one. I ask for that to be read in at this time.
Senate File 117, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, page 13, line 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate File 117 and ask again for the body's favorable consideration. This is a technical amendment from our staff, better explaining, I guess, getting it right as we talk about the retirement percentage. And so as it reads, it basically takes it to an 8.41% from 21.10%, and that is basically a technical amendment, and I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration on this Committee of the Whole Amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 117. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 117, signify by saying aye. Those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 117 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, and I'd ask for that amendment to be read at this time.
Senate File 117, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, page 1, line 12.
I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 117 and ask for the body's favorable consideration on this particular amendment. This amendment, Mr. Chairman, addresses the co-located schools. As you refer to your chart that it should be on your desk, what we noticed was a lot of these smaller schools were falling under this co-located school reduction. And the total amount was about $3.7 million as you totaled them all up, the money that would be lost. And a majority of that was to our smaller schools, which did not play well with our hold harmless to our small schools part of our bill. And so we're asking for that to be removed completely from the bill. And it's addressing the co-located schools, so that would not be considered a reduction in this particular bill at this time, Mr. Chairman. So
we're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 117. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 117, signify by saying aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes. We're back on the bill.
Back on the bill, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Senate File 117 is certainly a work in progress. We want to be completely transparent. We want to know what we're doing. We want these reductions to be smart, intelligent, fair, equitable, all the above, non-challengeable, and that's what we're after in Senate File 117. We're still looking, if you would refer to a chart that my good colleague handed out, titled Senate File 17. This was the Kinski handout. It's entitled Crosswalk Between Senate File 117 and the particular budget bill amendment. But it gives you a pretty good cross-reference or a spreadsheet on the categories that we're talking about in this particular Senate file. On page 1, we talk about the workers' compensation. It's on page 2, lines 4 through 12. The next one, we talk about average daily membership, page 3, lines 8 through 11. And you'll see that the amounts, workers' compensation is indeterminable. Every school district is different. This particular section was specifically directed towards special services programs within our districts that work with special needs students, and the workers' comp concern there. Average daily membership, the second one, 18.8 million, takes into consideration the interaction differences between the what we're talking about. This is 2019 impact. The third one, health insurance, again, indeterminable because every school district handles their health insurance differently. Retirement, the same way. We struck the co-located schools, which is $3.8 million, so that's no longer in the bill. You turn the page over, we address cash reserves. We ask for a report from each of the districts concerning the 15%, as well as other accounts that these schools have for different areas, whether it be technology or capital construction. So we want a full accounting there. The amount of that is indeterminable, and the bill also talks about when we find out what extra above and beyond the 15% and the pre-97 savings that were collected before 1997, those are pretty much reserved for the school districts as well as the 15%, but anything above that, this bill addresses the fact that we would consider going in there and recouping those monies. We also address class sizes, page 14, line 3 through 15, line 3, and then page 15, line 20. This was a decrease of $15.7 million, and this was according to our consultants. This was their recommendations, and of course, again, remember with all these categories, these are phased in over a four-year period. Remember, we kept hearing from our school boards and our administrators that if you're going to reduce, make sure that it's phased in, and so we can make those adjustments gradually. The next one was student assessments. This would eliminate assessment funding. Rationale is that the statewide assessment contract provides these types of assessments. This is a decrease of $2.4 million. Here is the hold harmless, page 20, lines 1 through 20. This provides a hold harmless amount for small school districts, and the set amount there, the number is 243 ADM or fewer that would be considered a small school and be eligible for this small school hold harmless section of this bill. That amount is indeterminable. We've got some estimates. It totals about $350,000 to $375,000 is all. Which speaks volumes to me anyway about our small school adjustment. The next one is the appropriation. That's been deleted. That was $10 million, $15 million total. 2019 it was 10. 2020 was the last five. So that's no longer in the bill. And then the last section was special education and transportation studies. This would require the Department of Education to further review the statute's rules regarding special education and transportation, again, to identify efficiencies or inefficiencies. Further requires the state superintendent to establish staffing guidelines currently required by law. That is the bill. That is the attempt, Mr. Chairman, and I would add that, again, this is a work in progress. I intend to bring some second reading amendments tomorrow that would better explain why we sacrificed the $15 million small hold harmless funding, and we eliminated that. Again, some of these areas, the ones that are indeterminable, I, like you, I'm concerned with that. I really am. And I think some of these areas need to be studied during the interim. Perhaps health care or health insurance and retirement. I'm a true believer that if we can't put a number to it, that I really can't expect people to vote on it when they don't know the effects. And so you'll see some second reading amendments tomorrow, and we'll get to those a little later on in the discussion. But that's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I ask for your favorable consideration. I'd stand for questions.
Any other questions or discussions? Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on and against the amendment, or a bill, actually, and for a lot of different reasons. But what I would like to say is in every community, the local school district is one of the largest employers in that community. And in fact, I think in Gillette, it's actually the largest employer. And so when we talk about these cuts, let's talk about jobs. Because already my community has experienced a significant decline in enrollment. So we are in our second year of that. And so we have about a $1.5 million cut from last year that we get this year because of the three-year average. And then because we had 20 students less this year than last year, we have that cut on top of it, and that's about $100,000. So we start out at $1.6 million with the $56 million that we cut a year ago. So now we're looking at whatever the percentage is. If you follow it all the way across the line, it's 2.5% in the first year, and that is a total of looks like about $4 million. And over the next 4 years, we will cut $4 million approximately each year for about $16 million. And so I figured that up. And so approximately every school district's budget, 85% of it is in salaries. And if you look at how much a teacher costs, with benefits and the salary and everything, it's about $78,000. So if you take 85% of $16 million, you come up with about 174 teachers over 4 years, and that's about 43 teachers per year. Now, one of the things, we only have a staff of 700 teachers. So obviously there's going to be a lot of aides that are going to lose their jobs also. In fact, I would say that as a building administrator for 17 years, there won't be an aide left standing. So let's move to the next district that I represent. I have a handful of kids that go to Converse 2 in Glen Rock, and they just went through, and their budget's relatively small, an $800,000 cut. And it looks to me like they're going to experience another $800,000 cut. Largely because they're in the same situation that Campbell 1 is in, which is a loss of enrollment, and they're experiencing that. And so the districts, two of those districts that I represent are experiencing the largest cuts of all our 48 districts that I've seen. And so I'd urge you to think about the jobs that we're talking about here. And it's going to be a pretty tough go in education for a long time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm against this legislation, and I certainly understand, as the body does, the need to find a way to address our revenue shortfall in education. We have cut over $70 million so far. That discounts what the ECA, the reductions in ECA, would have been. It discounts the fact that we're also reducing the costs through attrition and the lower numbers of ADM. So the revenue going out to districts is decreasing in a compound manner. But the reality is, we knew going into this that we weren't going to cut our way to a solution. We weren't going to save our way to a solution. We weren't going to tax our way to a solution. We were going to need all three components. The regrettable circumstance, Mr. Chairman, is that this year we don't have any revenues on the table. There were some that were raised. Unfortunately, they're not here for us. We can't incorporate them in a solution, so the attempt then, the kind of last-ditch effort, is to try and find things that we can cut. But we operate on a funding model, Mr. Chairman, that is based on what is an adequate and equitable education for all students in the state of Wyoming. That funding model, we know, is recalibrated. We know it has to be based on recommendations for the adequacy from consultants that put together a funding model. We can't just ad hoc that solution and expect it to be upheld by the courts. And we've gone through a process to establish how much that costs. The original recalibration, or the model, I should say, that we're operating under is the recalibration model from 2010. It's still that same model, which we're calling the legislative model, as amended by the legislature, but the original recommendations are what we're using as a baseline. That's the constitutional minimum. At this point in time, even though we had what we called legislative grace for many years, in fact, at one point we were $100 million over that minimum baseline. Through cuts, through failing to implement external cost adjustments, we have gotten to the point where, by some estimates, we're below what that minimum threshold is.
Then we had some updates to that model in 2015 recalibration that actually increased the amount that we needed to spend. We didn't adopt those recommendations. Instead, we asked for another recalibration, and that recalibration was performed this last year. Many of the recommendations that we see here as cuts are based on the recommendations for the cuts that are provided by those consultants that we hired. But it was very clear and explicit that those recommendations were not to be taken as an a la carte menu, where you can choose and pick between them, choose the cuts, but not implement the increases. In fact, I will quote now from the APA recommendations that these are based on, specifically the classroom in particular, an important caveat to the study team's recommendations to change class sizes is that salaries within the model need to be adjusted to more accurately reflect what districts are actually paying. If salaries are not adjusted, any change to class sizes would ultimately result in larger class sizes than recommended and likely push class sizes outside the bounds of current research best practices and adequacy findings. In other words, Mr. Chairman, if we implement this bill, if this is adopted and we make these cuts and these policy changes, we explicitly have in the most recent findings of the recalibration that this is not a constitutional model any longer. It's not even going to take a long lawsuit. This is a chip shot of a lawsuit waiting to happen because it so dramatically underfunds the model compared to either the current legislative model, the 2015 recalibration recommendations, or the recent 2017 APA recommendations that I think a first-year law student can safely handle this one. Mr. Chairman, let's reject this. Let's look for that comprehensive solution in the long run. This is not it.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is going to be the last time that I rise, but I just have two questions. And what's really bothering me about this bill is the whole harmless piece. And so I'd like an explanation as to why that's happening. And I would remind the body, in 1983, I believe it was, Washkakee versus Hirschler. The reason why Washkakee versus Hirschler was a Supreme Court decision was because we cut the municipal divisor, and the municipal divisor was what hurt large schools. And then ultimately what happened was the large schools brought suit against the state. And so essentially what we're doing is we're kind of doing the same thing we did years ago with Washkakee. But the second question is, and so I'd like a reason as to why we're doing that. And then the second question is, in House Senate File 28, we have school finance health insurance number 2. And in that bill, Mr. Chairman, we have the numbers of what it would cost if we do the health insurance piece in this bill. But we don't have it in the bill itself, and we don't have it in the Kinski handout. And I wonder why, because we have those numbers, but we didn't put it into our handout. So can you explain to me how much we're going to cut as a result of the health insurance piece? And I know it's late, and you've heard enough of me, and I'm done for the night.
Everybody, yay!
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had hoped that I could follow tight on the heels of my colleague, Senator Peterson, so let me just back up it a little bit. I want to start with just a little story. I can't remember which bust it was in the windy oil city in the middle of the state, but my father was on the board of a not-for-profit health care that begins with Y for youth. And they were really struggling. They were having this board meeting, and they went through all the different options that could fix it. Finally, my dad says, "Ain't this just a heck of a deal? We can't raise the fees, and we can't cut anything. I guess we just got to white-knuckle this baby right into the ground. You got to do something." And they did. And that's where we are. It's not pleasant duty, but we got to do something. I mean, if you go to that first handout, what you'll see is deficit 2018 session, K-12 operations, $1.797 billion. That's the biennial amount of what the state pays. That's and the gap is $484 million. If you go down to the next one, K-12 operations, this is both the school foundation guarantee, which is also both the state level and the local mill levy. Annually, that's $1.5 billion. Next year, it'll be about $1.5 billion, so $3 billion for the biennium. What this bill would do in its current form is in 19, $33 million, 2.3%. 2020, 2.8%, 46, 3.1%, and 2022, 3.7%. Now, appropriations knocked out the $15 million that was going to mute the impact in the first 2 years, so we will bring you tomorrow, assuming we get through here at any point tonight, a recalculation of the net effect post appropriations committee. But what we're seeking here is a balanced approach. There, people have looked at diversions. We've looked at tax hikes. We certainly have raided just about every coffee can, and we know that the wire is running out on that one. But look at what we're actually asking. The current deficit of $484 million, this 2019 cut is 7% of closing that whole gap. By 2022, it's 11% of closing that whole gap. And it's still going to be painful for the districts if we do this, but we've got to do something. And this is the frustration that my colleagues and I had on recalibration. We heard people, you can't cut this, you can't cut that, but no, none of them ever came forward with a plan that was acceptable, so it's been left to us. Or some were just plain out flat that we needed an income tax or we needed to significantly raise property taxes. And that I just don't think that dog's going to hunt, not in the current environment. So it's a phased-in approach. I think that helps as well. So let's go over to the crosswalk, the walkthrough of the bill. And I want to start with the indeterminate numbers that staff has given us, and I want to give you a little bit more understanding of what is in there. And we can put some more definition here. On the workers' comp, when it says indeterminate, it's simply because we're telling them, one, participate in the state's safe workers' comp program. And I've done that as an employer. You save 5% plus. But they don't know what their actual savings would be, but it'll be a net savings. Two, we're telling them to we are going to reclassify the extra hazardous, which we did a couple sessions ago, to say you're only extra hazardous when you're working with the students. We don't know how much that savings is going to be, but that's going to be a savings. And that's going to be a savings that falls to the district. Average daily membership, we know exactly what that is. Health insurance. Now, here's the reason that staff has put indeterminate, and we're going to work with them to get them to feel a little more comfortable about giving us a hard number. Also, we can come up with some amendments that'll put a floor under that. We do know what in aggregate that number is here. So part of what this bill does is my Cali colleague referred to as there are elements of the model that we've overfunded. There are elements of the model we're not even required to fund that we are. One of those is the so-called ghost employee. That comes about because the model may say your district is entitled to 500 employees. You decide you're going to hire 400 and give everybody a raise. You still get the money for the 500 for their health insurance and their pension. So it turns out that when it was studied, and this went to the Education Committee in September, when it was studied, it turned out that the state is giving the school districts $42 million more than they're actually spending on health insurance each year. $42 million, so there's a number. Now, the reason staff says they're not quite sure is because we pay whatever they pay based on the model. If they pay 75% of the insurance, that's what we do. And staff says, you know, in response to seeing this coming, those that are paying 75% might start paying 100%. Well, we can deal with that in amendment. So we'll work on getting that. Retirement, there is a number. It's $2 million approximately. They didn't feel comfortable putting it there because they can't get it with the precision they like. But that's about a $2 million number. And again, it's only for the employees that are on the payroll. And that simple thing is about $2 million. The co-located schools, my colleague indicated we've got to come back to that. The cash reserves, this one is going to need a little bit of work, folks. And here's the deal. There are various categories of reserves, and what our staff gets is a lump sum. So there are some reserves in there way above the 15% threshold that they don't really know what that amount is. So perhaps what we do is look at getting that reported so we know the magnitude. We know reported is about $250 million worth of reserves. All the schools, $250 million worth of reserves, or excuse me, is a quarter, what is it? $250 million. Yeah, quarter of a billion. And we're sitting there at the current goldenrod saying we'll be down to 1.2. So they will be at 20% of what we have. But there's more reserves there that we don't see. And so as long as we're talking about emptying over coffee cans, let's have an honest conversation about who has how much and which coffee cans. That's all that says. Class sizes. We keep the lower grades where they are, K through 3 at 16, and then there's just a modest bump on the rest, but that's $15.7 million. The groundskeepers, that's fairly straightforward. The student assessments, that's straightforward. The hold harmless, the estimate is about $350,000. The why of it is, to my colleague from Campbell County, I think it was Campbell 2 or 3 where the Supreme Court recognized equal education for all does not mean the same dollars per student. And they recognized that what they said exactly is small schools lack an economy of scale. And so they have given the constitutional blessing to treating small schools disproportionately to try and hold them harmless from what just a straight ADM would do. And that, so that's the answer for that. Appropriations cut out the $10 million the first year. Special education and transportation studies, it's indeterminate, but we'll know that in a year or two as they study it. So there really won't be a immediate fiscal impact until that study comes back and we decide what we're going to do. So that should narrow down the range of uncertainty. In terms of the magnitude of it, I would give you this. You may hear from your districts, this will cost us X, and you look at the spreadsheet and you say, well, this is different than what I'm getting on this report, in which case you can do as I did, send us your calculation of what you think this is going to cost you, and we'll give it to staff. So one of my districts did. They said it's going to cost me X, and it's not the 1.4% showing there for the district, so we'll turn it over to the staff and take a look at it. And see, maybe we just need to put a floor on the health insurance and the retirement. It'd be a simple fix. In the rules committee, the president made an observation that I'd like to share with you about the impact of this bill. And that relates to this exhibit that shows the cost per student of various states and how much Wyoming spends. And what you'll see there, when you look at it, the second to the right column is per pupil dollars. I think they're $94. And then the difference between us and them. And you'll notice there are only four states, I don't count the District of Columbia or the Department of Defense, only four states that pay more than us. We pay more than 44 other states. The president did a little calculation, and he figured, based on the projections we had here, this would change the ADM by about $368. So if you go to this chart here, under Wyoming, you see $15,797 is the per pupil. You subtract what this would amount to, the net amount, we are still higher than 44 other states when we're all done. So it's just a way to put it all in perspective. And I tell you, my senator from Cali takes no joy. I take no joy in this. None of us do. It's hard duty. We'd like to avoid it. but it's got to be done. We have to come up with a solution. We're running out of options rapidly. The economy's not going to turn around. We're not going to see $100 a barrel oil. Arguably, we started 3 years ago with just reducing the rate of increase with the ECA. Then we've had some cuts. You know, I've seen whole programs wiped out, whole programs completely wiped out. I've seen programs near and dear to me cut by 50% or more. And that we just have to put our shoulder to the wheel and work this bill through and come up with something that we think is workable, and then sit down with the House and see if we can send something to the governor that will meet what he asked of us when we began. The governor said, we all agree now is the time for reasonable cuts, and that's what we have to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge a favorable consideration of the bill.
Further discussion, Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I won't take long. But this is a rather important venture that we find ourselves on. I come from a district that has felt quite a bit of pain lately. We have closed at least three schools. That school board up there has been sued for closing one of the schools. And we, like my colleague in Campbell County, find ourselves losing students and losing budget because of it. And so I share the sentiment of my friend from Sheridan. There's nothing joyful about this. I'm happy to hear that my friend from Cowley is willing to continue to work this bill. I think it does have room for some amendments. I hope maybe we can talk about that teacher piece. You know, that classroom environment is something that I think all the way through this, I hope we can keep our focus right there. And if we're going to be asking more out of our teachers, maybe we can talk about providing a little bit more. And I think that's a conversation that we can have as we continue on down the road with this bill. But I think we need to advance it. I think we need to continue to work it. Each one of the items in this bill is related to our model. It's just a matter of how we pay that model. And we do not have the luxury that we used to have to overpay any of these items. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rasmus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to respond to a couple of the assertions that were made as going through the crosswalk. The concept that we're overfunding components of this block grant model, that may still be true to some degree, although we've cut most of that out. But we are underfunding a large number of the aspects of the model also. And it's that balance, and it's the recognition of the block grant that leads to whether or not we're adequately funding education in the state of Wyoming and an equitable education for all students. We underfund instructional facilitators, food services, school resource officers, energy right now. We underfund activities, and we dramatically underfund salaries, which is why APA currently are indicated in their most recent recalibration that we need to bring the salaries in the model in line with the salaries in reality. So we talk a lot about how well we fund teachers in the state of Wyoming, and that is true, but we don't fund them well in the model. That's the reason for the ghost salaries. It's a complicated circumstance, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to, is the block grant adequate for funding the basket of goods equitably in the state of Wyoming? And if it is right now, we're just barely there. But again, by many counts, we've fallen short on that. One other concern I'd just like to raise, and there's some with each of these takes, but the idea that we're just looking at the reserves of districts is not a correct interpretation of the changes on page 7. The concept for how the reserve works in the state is a school district is entitled to a general fund reserve up to 15% of their general fund, and that's basically their operational expenses, cash flow, and then they use some of the reserves from time to time. They're entitled to up to 15% that doesn't count towards what is effectively their state resources. Above that, if they have 16% or more,
or more than 15%, I should say, accurately, that amount actually counts against their state allocation. So it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction against their budget. What we're adding in here is that the amount of their reserves shall include any monies within a capital improvement reserve fund or special reserve fund. A capital improvement reserve fund is a sinking account. For example, if you have a roof that's going to need replacing in 20 years and you're fiscally responsible, you start putting away money from your major maintenance each year. So we're going to count those assets against their local reserves and basically dollar for dollar reduce their distribution if this passes. So even if this does move forward in some way, I would certainly encourage the proponents of this bill to think through that provision, because I think it's antithetical, Mr. Chairman, to what we would actually want to do, which would be responsibly financing long-term maintenance and operations of the school districts. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. I think everybody's tired.
Senator Peterson.
Just briefly, I'll try to answer some of those questions. I think we've tried to address the small school hold harmless. The total amount there of that estimation was $375,000. $375,000. Keep that in mind. Small schools will be forced to perhaps, instead of firing an aide or letting an aide go, they'll be letting a fine arts teacher go or a music teacher go. That's the difference between large school and small school. We talk about the scale of the economy. That should be the answer for those questions on small school adjustment. We recognize it in the past. My question to the body is, we recognize scale of economy on small school adjustments, but we don't recognize the scale economy on larger schools and how they can maybe educate kids because of the scale of economy less with less money. The revenue bills, the question of when we came into this session, we knew what we were facing. We knew exactly what we were facing. I don't think there's anybody in this room who worked harder than I did on revenue bills. I chair that committee, and we had 12 bills, and most of them have gone down. So the balanced approach of attacking this issue of our shortfall on education funding, we've cut the legs out of one of those, one of the legs out because we just don't have the stomach to raise taxes, to come up with additional revenue, to fill in the holes that are left because of Coley's bonus money gone. Over $100 million just in that area gone. So we're left with spending down more reserves. And that's what we've decided to do. I'll back that. It's not the long-term solution I was looking for, but we'll fill this hole with our reserves. My question is, will we have the stomach to address the other leg by making the cuts? If we can't cut with this at 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, I don't know what the answer is. We're phasing it in. I've mentioned that I'm going to work on the reserves issue. If I have my way, that'll be gone on second reading. Health insurance, that'll be gone on second reading. Retirement, that'll be gone on second reading. How low can we go? We can go down to zero, make no cuts at all, keep spending those reserves. Now is the time to right the ship. Baby steps, I want total transparency. I want interim topics. I want public input. I want these reductions to be smart. All of us. I keep telling my constituents back home, this is the same legislature that has worked so hard in building the education program that we have now. We ought to pat ourselves on the back. And I don't want to cut the legs out from underneath that. I don't believe that these small reductions will affect the quality of our education in the least. Not in the least. I believe that. And I think we need to continue to work with this team, with our administrators, with our school boards, with our teachers. An email I got this morning, Mr. Chairman, was, do you listen to any of the educational professionals before you make these reductions? That's all I've done this year. I mean, between emails and texts, that's what we do. We take input. Of course we depend on our professionals to give us input. That's what we do. So I hope I've answered some of the questions. And again, just remember, body, this is phased in. This is as minuscule as we can possibly get. give us a chance for second reading. Let's take care of those concerns. And we'll start slow. We'll take interim topics, and we'll work through this process, and we'll right the ship. We'll make it sustainable. That's the goal. I'd ask for your consideration on the bill.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 117, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 117 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. We've got three bills left on the board. Our staff has been sitting there a long time. I know the chairman's, I won't even say what the chairman is doing right now, but anyway. We're going to take 5 minutes and we're going to pound out the ship. So let's take 5 minutes.
Working us like an old mule. Federal Senate, east of the sound
of the gavel. The Senate is at ease until the sound of the gavel.
Call this person real quick and ask her why she thinks I voted for her.
Right.
it up.
So, we're hoping the lawyers are all against it. You know what I said? At least the rest of it, they kept talking about the grant case that we're not so great. I said, so you've got the police and these three groups of people, right? You've got the
Hey,
what are they,
just
taking a break until
you
gavel back in?
Or? Yeah, that's, he just told me to gavel it back in.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. Only doing two? Oh, he dropped another one off.
Yeah.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 85. If we can at least have it a little bit down out there, please. Senate File 85. The reading clerk will please read in the Senate file.
Senate File 85, Certificate of Nonviable Birth, an Act Relating to Vital Records, sponsored by Senator Boehner, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boehner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Chairman, I move the committee to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 85 do pass. No standing committee amendment, and I yield to Senator Boehner for an explanation.
Senator Boehner.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have before us Senate File 85, a certificate of nonviable birth. This bill will give families who suffer a miscarriage between 10 and 20 weeks of pregnancy the option of obtaining a certificate of nonviable birth. Now, we all know friends and family members who have experienced such a loss. We all know that this can very easily be a very serious life event for those experiencing such a loss. In fact, according to the Wyoming Department of Health, in their analysis, approximately 880 Wyomingites will experience a miscarriage between 10 and 20 weeks of pregnancy. It's worth the modest change in our statutes to give these families the option of obtaining a certificate if it will help in the grieving process. Now, it's important to note that the state of Wyoming currently requires stillbirth certificates for miscarriages between or after 10 weeks, and 10 weeks and before 10 weeks, miscarriages are much more likely. Also, as a practical matter, the doctors will offer the patient a certificate. Paperwork is only required when a patient requests one. This has been coordinated with our society, which represents doctors in the political process, who is normally very adamant about pushing back against any infringement upon the doctor-patient relationship. It's important to point out that they have remained neutral on this piece of legislation. Just want to point that out because there has been a significant amount of controversy surrounding this bill. The vast majority, if not all, to my knowledge, of that controversy has been based on information which is inaccurate. So please, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go through the bill now. Let's do that together, please. So it starts on page 2. The substance of the bill starts on page 2. You'll see this deals with physicians, physician assistants, or advanced practice registered nurses who will advise the patient, shall advise the patient, that they can request. This is up to the patient. It is optional. The patient can request this certificate. We are not forcing it upon anybody. So they can request both the filing and a copy of these certificates. Getting down to page 2, upon that request, and only upon the request, they shall file within 30 days with the local registrar. So, moving on, there's conforming amendments. Once we get into section 2, which is on page 3, conforming amendments up until page 4, line 9, where we have the definition of non-viable birth. Now, this is very important because it means an unintentional spontaneous demise of the unborn child. I want to focus on the unintentional. This has nothing to do with abortion. That is one of the major falsehoods regarding this bill. So this is dealing with actual miscarriages, nothing else. So please focus on that definition. Moving on, page 4 all the way until page 6, line 10. Those are all conforming amendments going on and adding non-viable births to existing events for vital records. Then we have the actual form of the certificates on page 6. So it specifies what's going to be on the certificates, the date that the non-viable birth occurred or was diagnosed, and that's important because they have the option. The medical provider has the option. Obviously, you know, it may not be easy to determine exactly when that miscarriage occurred. So either occurred or diagnosed, there's flexibility there. The county in which it happened, and the if they want to add a name on that certificate, they have the option of doing so. It's important to point out that especially when you get closer to that 10 weeks of a pregnancy, it's very difficult and very expensive to determine what the sex of the child is. That's why we give them the option of not necessarily determining the sex of the child. Then we have a catch-all there at the top of page 7, any other items that may be prescribed by vital records. We have conforming amendments all the way until page 8, moving on from there, line 5. Where we stipulate that vital records has 60 days to go ahead and finish that certificate process. Conforming amendments to page 9, line 17, where we have rules that will rulemaking that will go effective immediately and effective date of July 1st. As an added note, I'd just like to point out that all vital records are confidential according to Title 35. 35-1-426, and in case there is any question as to who exactly the parents are, in this case who the father is, that's already covered under existing statutes, existing procedures for determining similar questions in our birth certificates and our stillbirth certificates, which once again are required after week 20. So those same procedures would apply to this provision. So there will, if you look at the fiscal note, there will be a very modest administrative impact on vital records. They have to update their software. They'd have to issue more certificates. We are allowing them to charge, as they do with any certificate in vital records, $10 to help offset that cost. That is the bill, ladies and gentlemen. I understand that not every woman who experiences a miscarriage will want such a certificate, but felt the need to leave the choice up to the individuals. This could be one of the only tangible reminders a family has of a pregnancy, and many families go home and suffer in silence, and that certainly will continue to be an option if this legislation becomes law. But for those who want a different option, this is an opportunity to break that silence on an important issue which affects so many people. I'd certainly encourage your support and will stand for any questions.
Any further discussion on said file 85? Seeing Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm always amazed sometimes at the way things that we discuss here are interpreted differently by different people and how there's like a vast gulf sometimes. People see things different ways. Maybe it's about the Second Amendment, Mr. Chairman. People see it this way, and people see it this way. Maybe it's about the topic of abortion, Mr. Chairman. People see things different ways. I've always tried to operate that down here, we have to find the best path for all the people. And I have a very varied district, Mr. Chairman. I think you might know. I think it's one of the most colorful, diverse districts in the state. I'm very proud of my constituents. And so I also think that when we do things down here, we have to look at it that we have our own lens that we apply here. And one of the lenses is that we're pretty much, I don't know if you've noticed, but most of us are guys here. Most of us are very conservative. Many of us are of religions that are very conservative, Mr. Chairman. And this all colors our viewpoints. Sometimes issues are just so personal that these lenses that we have that make us fiscally responsible and steer this great state fiscally, that's not the right lens to apply to these very personal situations. And we have to realize that sometimes. And sometimes it just you know, my constituents tell me things that are powerful. I have not had a single constituent contact me in support of this bill. I have had many contact me against this bill. And a very powerful one I want to read to you. I just want to read it to you. And, Mr. Chairman, it's from the husband of a woman. And I thought she also sent me a letter, and it was very powerful. But this one is kind of reminding me that this is a guy that went through this with his wife, and he's trying to reach out and explain to the men in this room what this felt like and why this bill is so repugnant to them. And so I'm going to read the letter. Senator Case, my wife and I learned she was pregnant in the spring of 2012. That time was exciting and hilarious. I'd heard about this fatherhood thing, and I'd seen it portrayed on TV, and I'd even experienced someone doing it to me. But the idea of actually being a father was terrifying. We kept it quiet except to tell our parents. Like so many men before me, I laughed about being clever around our friends when they offered us beers. And then my wife experienced excessive bleeding. She learned on her birthday that she'd miscarried. Intellectually, we knew it was common, but emotionally, we were devastated. We experienced intense grief and a confusing sense of loss. All of those hopes and plans for the nursery, the dog's new sleeping arrangements, and dreams of my kid being an improved version of me, gone. We didn't really know how to cope. Miscarriages may be common, but they're not routine. It shook us to our cores, and it was the most traumatic event in our marriage. If you've been married, then maybe you've experienced the searing pain of crying in separate rooms because you're physically unable to comfort one another. There for a while, I couldn't fathom. How about keeping it quiet back there, Mr. Chairman?
Let's have some respect, please, for the speaker.
There for a while, I couldn't fathom how those days could have been more gut-wrenching. But this bill somehow pulls it off. Had our doctor asked, or been required by law to ask, or been reported for not asking, if we wanted a, quote, non-viable birth certificate, well, it would have a sucker punch when we were already on the ground. I'm not writing this to change anyone's mind about abortion, although I think this bill is obviously a backdoor attempt to define personhood. I'm not writing this to debate the role of government in the doctor-patient relationship, though I think this bill is an absurd intrusion into the medical profession by people who think being elected magically endows them with more knowledge than medical experts. Rather, I'm writing as a man whose wife suffered a miscarriage. This bill hurts people. It causes extreme emotional trauma at a time when they're already in agony. And as a husband, I don't cotton to nosy politicians hurting my wife. I acknowledge that there might be some good altruistic intentions behind this bill, but I'm telling you, those intentions are vastly outweighed by the trauma it inflicts on families at an extremely vulnerable time. I'm telling you this as a husband. Senators, keep your god-awful ideas about miscarriages out of your constituents' private lives. Please feel free to share this with your colleagues in the Senate. A constituent of mine sees this differently than the way that some people here do. And I guess that's the strength of Wyoming, perhaps we are so different. But this is an area where we cross the line and cause this much pain when we're trying to solve pain, apparently, with this bill, but cause this much pain. I ask my colleagues to reject this bill. Once again, a situation where the Wyoming is 100 years of statehood. We've been through this. They've had many opportunities to do something like this before, and here we are today. This is a bad idea because of the pain it will cause people like my friend and my constituent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I know that we probably have everybody having made up their mind on this bill. But I did want to rise. I do have a question about the bill. And I do have to say that I have received 4 emails from my district. I do try to listen to the folks back home, and all 4 of those emails were vehement in their request of me to vote no on this bill. All 4 were women, and all 4 said that that was one of the most traumatic issues that they had ever faced in their lives, and that this really doesn't belong. But the question that I have is, if it's optional to obtain the certificate, why are we making it mandatory for our healthcare professionals to have to, in every single case, no matter what, to inform the patient of the availability of that certificate?
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you heard testimony of the number of emails, and I have received quite a few. And I understand the fine senator has the best of intentions on this bill. However, the bill does nothing more than impose costs and burdens, I feel. I also feel this bill could, I say could, place one more obstacle between women, their medical advisors, and government in the control of their bodies. I urge rejection of this bill.
Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I heard a lot of the same arguments over and over about this bill. But then when I read through the bill, it didn't have the same mandates that I kept hearing about. Matter of fact, I think this bill is a great pro-choice bill. It allows a parent or a would-be parent to do something that they want to do. And for the rest that don't want to do it, they don't have to do it. It seems to me, just like with some of the debates I heard earlier in committee on a totally different issue, there were people that came in and had these contrived ideas that have nothing to do with this bill. I stand in support of the bill.
Further discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against the bill, and I do understand that a choice is given, but the choice is mandated to be given. It is inserting the government into a relationship between a patient and their doctor in a way that clearly, from the feedback we've heard, not all patients want. Here's a quote from a resident of Laramie. It's a little bit shorter than my colleague's constituent, but another person who experienced a miscarriage goes like this. Wyoming Senate File 85, look it up. As a woman who has suffered miscarriage, I have every right, more than the sponsor or any man in the legislature, to tell you that it's ghoulish, unnecessary, and absolutely stunningly painful to even read its title opening. A woman loses a baby, and the Wyoming legislature thinks the first thing they need is a piece of paper to remind them of a pain that will never go away. What a disgusting proposition. Pay attention to the problems we actually can solve, gents. Get on to the well-being of the children in our schools, diversification of the economy, whatever you can and should try to influence. Stay out of the ghoul business. Unbelievable. You know what would really have helped me? Grief counseling, a way to actually take that bed rest that the doc said I needed because there were triplets sitting in my belly. Some help around the house. But a certificate reminding me of my failed pregnancy? Nope. I have not received or even heard about any positive responses to this legislation from anybody that's actually had a miscarriage. Zero. To my understanding, there was no public testimony in favor of it. The people who have experienced miscarriages are horrified by the concept that the conversation would go like this. I'm very sorry for your loss. I'm required to tell you that I have to offer you the possible option of having a certificate of a non-viable birth. Mr. Chairman,
This legislation is big government. It's more government than we need. It doesn't serve the purpose of public interest. And Mr. Chairman, I urge the body to reject this piece of legislation.
Senator Boner.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. Just to, a few basic things, and to repeat myself. First of all, a Wyomingite asked me to run this bill, and yes, she was a woman, as it turns out. So the idea that everybody, the only folks who have the opportunity to comment on these issues is a woman, I just point out that that's how this whole thing started. I just point out, we've had a lot of discussion about emails. Those emails are based on lies. If that's how we make decisions, in this body, if we get a bunch of emails that have been propagated by groups which have been absolutely untruthful in the way they present this bill, then I'd submit that we have lost something as an institution. This is a very modest bill. As I pointed out, this is something which has been coordinated with our medical professionals. They, like I said, they usually have a problem when we actually insert government into the doctor-patient relationship. They have remained neutral on this bill. I'd ask you to trust their judgment. And I think that's about all I have to say. I think it's time to vote on this, if that's okay with everybody.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 85, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Chairs in doubt. With all those in favor, please rise. Those opposed? Vote with 16-13, Senate File 85 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 91. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 91, Government Contracts Labor Organization, an act relating to public works and contracts, sponsored by Senator Anderson, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that Senate File 91 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment. I yield to Senator Anderson for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This Senate File 91 is a act relating to public works and contracts prohibiting governmental entities, and I repeat that, governmental entities only, from including specified terms related to labor organization agreements in construction-related contracts and grants. Now, what that means is the PLAs are called these project agreements, project labor agreements. They require that the contractor pay into a union retirement plans, pension plans, various areas, and that the employees pay into the union with dues. The contractor can or may not be signatory to the union, but he still has to pay in. They would prefer them to be signatory to a contract or a union contract. It's an executive order that states that you have to do this. It was an executive order in 2009. It's 13,502. It repealed President Bush's PLA ban on federal and federally assisted projects that had been in place since 2001. 22 states have now restricted government-mandated PLAs as of November 2016, and there are 10 that have legislation pending now. So that'd be 32 states that would have a PLA law on the books. The committee, there was a question if the PLAs or this bill would affect federal and state prevailing wage rates, and it does not. The prevailing wage rates continue to be on any project, federal, state, and local government, so the federal and state prevailing wage rate continues. This hopefully levels the playing field for the union shops and the open shops, that all of them can bid on public work projects in the state. We're a right-to-work state, and this would be a right-to-bid state also. Thank you. I hope you look for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. We're on Senate File 91, Government Contracts, Labor Organizations. Any further discussion? Senator Hastert.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I know the hour is late, and I wasn't going to do this, but to somehow feel compelled. You know what? It's Senate File 91, and I stand in opposition to this. And here again, you know, we talked about, you heard about making policy on myths and misinformation. And I know you've received a handout that talks about what project labor agreements are and what they aren't. And some of the myths are that they limit competition. Project labor agreements increase cost, and that they discriminate against non-union contractors, and those are myths. Facts are they're open to all contractors, have a strong record for on-budget performance. Non-union contractors have successfully bid on projects with project labor agreements, and project labor agreements guarantee local workers on local projects. Local workers on local projects. What a concept. Guarantee workers are properly trained, and project labor agreements are known for also when it's all spelled out, that increases safety for a project. And from the university, and I found this today from the University of Illinois. They did a study some years ago on what project labor agreements are, and I'm going to read to you the project labor agreement is a pre-hire agreement covering all crafts on a large, complex, long-term construction project in order to establish comprehensive employment terms and conditions for construction projects. A PLA, therefore, operates as a job site constitution establishing safe work conditions and rules, project execution and accountability on the job, and protocols for resolving any kind of disputes without resorting to any kind of strikes or lockouts. The principal aim of a project labor agreement is to promote stability and productivity. A PLA is a valuable construction management tool for project planning and labor cost reduction, which establishes quality standards that the private contractor must contractually meet. This is us getting into local control. This is between communities, cities and counties, and a contractor, and this is about local control, and I ask you to resist this bill.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Any additional discussion on Senate File 91? Seeing none, questions been called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 91, please say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 91 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for your consideration does not exist. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise, report, and get the hell out of here.
It's a great motion. You have heard that motion, body. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries, Mr. President.
Amen and amen.
Will the reading clerk please read, hopefully, the last Senate File Committee of the Whole report for this session?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 111, do pass. Senate File 120, do pass, amended. Senate File 93, do pass, amended. Senate File 94, do pass. Senate File 96, failed to pass the Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 17, do pass, amended. Senate File 30, do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 4, do pass. Senate File 45, do pass, amended. Senate File 57, do pass. Senate File 64, do pass, amended. Senate File 72, do pass, amended. Senate File 73, do pass, amended. Senate File 74, do pass, amended. Senate File 83, do pass. Senate File 97, do pass. Senate File 101, do pass. Senate File 107, do pass, amended. Senate File 113, do pass, amended. Senate File 108, do pass, amended. Senate File 100, do pass, amended. Senate File 118, do pass, amended. Senate File 119, do pass, amended. Senate File 98, do pass. Senate File 99, do pass, amended. Senate File 117, do pass, amended. Senate File 85, do pass. Senate File 91, do pass. Senator Hastert, Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, I move for adoption and of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That report is adopted. We will have Committee of the Whole in the morning. I was just a little tired, like all of us are, in a long day. Standing Committee reports.
February 22, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 71, Stand Your Ground, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
We have messages from the House. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. That clears the desk.
I got to make the motion first. Oh, thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, February the 28th, 29th, 30th. It's been a long day, hasn't it?
23rd.
How about the 23rd?
Announcements. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Here we go. Your committee, Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 23rd. Time, 15 minutes afternoon recess in Jonah Room S18 to hear the following bills. HB 19, Wyoming Money Transmitter Act Virtual Currency Exemption, and HB 70 Engrossed Open Blockchain Tokens Exemptions. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet upon noon recess tomorrow down in the LSO room to take up House Bill 76, Supplemental Security Income Program, House Bill 88, State Construction Department Amendments, and House Bill 109, Public Employee Retirement Plan Contributions.
Any other announcements? You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate stands adjourned. The motion carries. The Senate stands adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, February 23rd.
That was the official holiday till they made it the President's Day. As a matter of fact, Martin Luther King is the only individual that has a holiday named after him. I've been wrong.
You don't remember when?
Oh, I remember. They stand out.
They're what keep me up at night.
Yes.
other day.
We're not.